This is martial art master Daniel Pacina. You know me as Johnny Cage, Scorpion, Sub-Zero, Reptile, and Smoke. You are tuning in to Video Game Bullshit. And if you're not, finish him. So get over here.
Welcome to episode 115 of Video Game Bullshit. It's time, Tristan. It's time.
Oh, it's always time. When can we find time to talk about the time? That's the problem.
That's true story is, in classic bullshit fashion, we never ever were able to make it weekly. We would try, but like life happens.
Oh,
work happens. I'm hanging out, and you know it's fun. It's fun though, and I got stories from the last couple of weeks. I'm sure you got stories from the last couple of weeks.
I absolutely do.
Heck, and I'm using new microphone that I got when I was out hunting last weekend. So
fancy. Pretty.
Yeah. So what have you been up to, Tristan?
Oh, gosh, I want to dive right into, and I told you this story, but everybody needs to hear this. It's a little bit embarrassing. It has to do with my whole sleep saga, which
you've been hearing about.
So, when I don't use my CPAP, my oxygen levels dive to about 50%, which is real dangerous. So, you know, I got to use my CPAP, but sometimes I'm down in my basement, all comfortable, like watching YouTube, whatever, and I fall asleep. Well, I was watching a YouTube video. Don't remember what it was. I think it was like Slopes Game Room or something like that, which, you know, I love that guy. But I was listening to Slopes and the video ended. And by this time I was asleep. That's not a narrative on Slopes. That's a narrative on my sleep issues. He's very entertaining. Just to clarify, anyway, so I fell asleep and in YouTube fashion, it like starts a new video in like 5-10 seconds or whatever. So it started a new video and it was one that my wife had queued up for my cats. I have four cats. I'm a cat dad. No kids. Cat dad. Anyway, so there's a video queued up for my cats so that they can like play in front of the TV and like swat at bugs and stuff. Well, there happened to be a mosquito flying around on this particular video, and it was super loud because I was down in my basement with surround sound. So my oxygen deprived brain was convinced that there was a Mothra sized bug flying around my head, and I'm not swatting at it. But I was cowering under a blanket. I was so afraid for my life. I was like looking for my phone, which I knew was like right next to me. So I found my phone and I called my wife. I'm like, come down to the basement. There's something down here. And then like, you know, halfway down, whenever she like got to there, then I came to and I realized what was going on and I was embarrassed. And now I'm telling all of you, so I guess I'm not that embarrassed, but it's funny.
Type of stories make the best stories, though. And it was very interesting because last week we had every intention to record episode 115.
Yeah.
And because I was out hunting and game hunting in 15, I got back and I think you were passed out by the time I got back. I'm like, what, 5 hours behind you or something like that?
Uh-huh.
So... like, are you on Central or Mountain Time?
I'm on Central.
Yeah, so 5 hours behind you. And so by the time I got back, like, because right now I just had my morning coffee and you're in afternoon time.
Yeah, it's like 3:05 and I think you just woke up. So, or yeah, whatever. It's 6 o'clock,
so I definitely had my coffee and relaxed. We've been BSing for a little bit too. The bullshit before the bullshit. That's what we did. We ever do a video game bullshit Patreon, people can join us for the bullshit before the bullshit. Yeah, we're not going to do a Patreon yet. We ain't there.
Maybe down the road.
Maybe the bullshit before the bullshit. It's been a crazy couple of weeks. It's been fun. I was telling you, I actually, because, you know, the military side, I was running a range on
one weekend.
months. And so I had worked like the full week, and I put in like 16-hour day work days. And then I move over to Saturday, where we're running the range on a Saturday. And that was insane. And the thing is like my soldiers aren't the infantry side. They're the smart people. The smart
people. The pointy heads, as we call them.
Poindexters. But the thing is, so they don't use the weapons as much, which means it's even more for safety. So, well, they're great though, by the way. They crushed it. They did shot well comparatively. Then after though, my wife had a hard cutoff for me because she wanted to go to the mall. And we had planned, my daughter wanted to go to a place called Box Lunch. I don't know if you've heard of Box Lunch before.
No, Kristen. It sounds like a bento box place. Am I right?
I think it's named after something like that, but essentially they have kind of like Ross would have different items at the store that were from like big box stores.
Oh, I was way off. I was thinking it was a food place.
Box Lunch is, well, I mean, it says lunch in the name. Box Lunch takes a bunch of name brand things, kind of like what you'd find in a Target at the collectible area. But they take like Disney stuff. They take video game stuff, Sanrio stuff, and they have it all there. So there's tons of cute things my daughter wants. I got my Super Mario Brothers Hawaiian shirt, the Aloha shirt from Box Lunch. And that was previously an online exclusive. It's the one I wore at Portland. That one, the fire flowers and everything. That's at a Box Lunch as well. So we went there to Box Lunch, and my wife had mentioned, oh, there's also a bookstore out there. Little did I know, it was Book Off. And your reaction that I got to go to a Book Off in Hawaii, because it's a Japanese retail like store.
I'm upset. And I'll tell you why I'm upset. And you know why I'm upset, but they don't know why I'm upset. I'm upset.
I know.
I'm upset because this is, I mean, where he's stationed right now, I used to go like 2, 3, 4 times a year. And like every single time I went there, I'm like, oh, there's nothing for me to do because, you know, I'm on like a Hawaiian island. Where are there retro games? I could never find them. I'd like Google search. Nothing would come up. There was a freaking Book Off. Come on.
Like I'm telling you, I came from Georgia. There was a damn desert of retro games in Georgia. Like nothing there anywhere. I come here, I go to the flea market a few weeks ago, and there's a retro video game guy there. I go to Book Off, and it's boxed Super Famicom games, boxed NES games, sitting there, like, and decent prices, like, well below eBay, like, very fair priced. I mean, and I'm talking, like, tons. My daughter, though, was getting a little anxiety because the rows are very thin, and everybody's on a low out time, so they're all over the place, everywhere. They also had figurines and books and all that stuff there, too. Tons of it. But, it's, you know, Hawaii embraces the Asian and Japanese culture. They love it, and Japanese video game fan. Oh,
yeah. So just like Okinawa is like their tropical place, Hawaii is our tropical place. So like Hawaii and Okinawa are very similar to each other,
dude. And this Book Off was really cool. It was the picture that I sent you guys of Wolf Child. That was at Book Off. Copy of it. I did not buy it. I probably should have because it was a badass full art cover. I love the art from the Genesis version of Wolfchild. Looks so good versus the one for the Super Nintendo that just looks.
It's weird. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a big werewolf on the cover. So cool. We went to Book Off. Really, really cool. And then the next day, which was last Sunday, because now we're recording on this Sunday. We went to a bunch of thrift stores. So we go to this one place and my wife just goes, oh, it's like I don't even know what it was called. But she had it all planned out. It's by this Dole area behind a Costco. And we go over there, go in there, and it's like wall to wall action figures everywhere, like tons of figures. There's out of the box Dragon Zord sitting over there. There's figures. I sent you a picture, though. A ton of Game & Watches are there. Mario Brothers, like Donkey Kong 2, they're all just there. And again, fairly priced. However, if I bought all of it, it would have been ridiculously expensive because there were so many. I did buy a new Samsung satellite microphone that I have right here that my, I think my audio is coming in much more clear. Cause I think the blue microphone I was using, I think uses some kind of cancellation. Whereas this actually has multiple microphone settings and it has a single cardioid where it can just do a single channel. So it doesn't pick up all the ambient noise. So pretty cool. Got it really cheap. There's a ton of other games there too, though. They had, I want to say 5 or 6 different Super Nintendo controllers there, like just tons and tons of stuff there. We go to another place called Savers, and at Savers, there's tons of retro game stuff there.
I've heard of Savers. I've never seen, like, is it a West Coast thing?
I think it's a, it must be a West Coast thing. But yeah. I mean, if you think about it, it's like another giant version of Goodwill. It's huge. And then in the middle of the clothing racks, there's toys on top of the racks. There's baggy toys on the outside. I even found an old school binder of cars and planes that you would get at the book fair days where you have like the insert into the binder. I found an old school 80s one of those there. Tons and tons of stuff at Savers. And then we go to – there was a Goodwill Goodwill outlet. I don't know if you've ever heard of a Goodwill outlet.
No.
So essentially, they have all these troughs. And they bring out a trough, and they have everybody line up behind a yellow line. And then they go, oh, and everybody goes and pulls out all the stuff, and they do it by weight.
Oh, okay.
And so, we're doing that. We're looking around. Everything looks like, eh, it's okay. It's all picked through. Because this is stuff that didn't make it into a Goodwill store.
Sure.
And then my wife looks behind us as we're waiting at the starting line. She's like, what's this? And it's a metal tin that looks like it's like a grill thing from like a restaurant. It's filled with Garbage Pail Kids cards, originals.
That's awesome. I saw the picture. I didn't know the story behind it. That's really cool.
And there are over 200 cards in there, and it cost us $1 because I think it was like $3 or $4 for the bin, but they did the weight on the metal tin thing. And my wife relegated it to the time we found a box filled with Masters of the Universe toys. She's like, let's go buy it before somebody notices. Like, she was like, let's go buy it. Let's get it. And what's cool is there's a Vile Kyle in there, which was perfect for VG.
Yes, that's meant to be.
No Tristan or Jeff's in there, unfortunately.
Well, yeah, okay. Jeff is much more likely to be a thing. I don't think there's ever been a Tristan Garbage Pail Kid card. There's discrimination against me.
We need our tasty Tristan with a giant jaw tasting.
Put my head or something. Come
Coach
on.
Simcoe, what are we doing here? Let's get on this. We need Tristan cards. there is a Jeff one, but it was earlier in that series before when the card started that I got. It's earlier in the series. But I found a ton. I found like a Barry one. I found a Josh one for the premium team. Awesome. Like some classics. Bunch of Franks.
Little side note, like, so Garbage Pail Kid cards. Have you ever seen the Garbage Pail Kid movie before?
Oh, yeah. Gross.
Do you remember Nat Nerd from that movie? I mean, it's like the most disgusting Garbage Pail Kid. It's like, it's this fat comic book nerd that's wearing like a Superman costume, and it like pees itself. It's got like pee stains on underwear outside of its pants. It's like zitty, has curly hair, like snot coming out of its. It's like the most disgusting Garbage Pail Kid. And my wife's name is Natalie, and we call her Nat. And whenever we saw it, we'd never seen the movie before. And whenever Nat Nerd came out, she was upset. She's like, really? This is the one that I get? So, like, pretty recently in Target stores, they had, like, reprints of, I think it was Series 4 of Garbage Pail Kid cards, but Topps Chrome. So I purchased some packs in search of Nat Nerd, and finally I got it.
It's classics. Yeah. I just remember back in the day, I had one Garbage Pail Kid card left that I didn't have stuck on everything that I got. Uh-huh. And it was like this Lady Liberty one. It was like Statue of Liberty, gross looking.
Yeah.
And it was Kid Brother, and that's why my brother gave it to me. It's like gross Kid Brother, being a pain in the ass. I got that card in the set. So I got that card as well, the one from my childhood, which is very cool. Nice. Yeah, it was funny as my nephew, who's 30, didn't know about Garbage Pail Kids. And I'm like, I did not know about Garbage Pail Kid cars. Where are you hiding at? Because they still are releasing them to this day. There's
new
Garbage Pail Kid NES game. There's, all this stuff that came out. So it's like, I don't know. I guess they just put their hole in the ground or head in the hole. What's his name? Huh?
Well, you're the one that doesn't know about the Garbage Pail Kid cards.
My nephew Mikey.
Mikey? Okay, you need to find a Mikey card and give it to him.
I found two of them. Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
That's why I saw them in the pictures. It was like classics. Oh, yeah. There's a bunch. But, yeah, there's definitely a Mikey card. There's Mikey and Mickey and not a damn Jeff. So, okay. Or Tristan. Yeah, we went hunting around. There's tons and tons of little treats like that out here in Hawaii. You just got to know where to find them.
Yeah, that's crazy, man. Like, I mean, I didn't have a whole lot of time to go exploring because I was there on business all the time. But I did do some searching at like malls or whatever. I guess I just didn't go too far off the beaten path like you have so far.
I mean, I'm here. And then we purposely haven't really traveled yet the island, because we're here for so long that we're trying not to like get burnout, get island fever.
Absolutely. Yeah, you gotta take time.
We really just stayed to our little pocket. It's almost like if you're at your place where you have like your neighborhood, you have the stores around you, and then you go to and from work. That's kind of what we're doing, except for we have a beach that's 5 minutes away. And then we'll adventure out to that mall where we had the book off, and then we'll go a different place, This weekend, we kind of decided to take a chill a little bit, but we do want to hit North Beach for the first time soon.
North Beach is gorgeous, man. The drive up there alone is beautiful, that highway.
Well, I'm like almost at North Beach where I work. Mm-hmm. So I think I'm like 10 minutes shy of going all the way up to North Beach. So like we're almost there as it is. But like, yeah, whatever the wife wants to do, like whenever she wants to go, we will go. We were going to go island hopping and stuff, but because of the fires that have happened since we recorded last.
Yeah, Maui.
There's been a lot of rebuilding that's going to have to go on.
I was actually wondering that as part of an army, like a military over in Oahu. Is there a military presence over in Maui at all?
No, not that I'm tracking.
Are you guys as a military unit or whatever, usually the military steps up if there's any sort of humanitarian aid that needs, help with or like supplies or whatever. Are you guys seeing any of that?
I'm doing tons of it. I know at every unit that's out here, we're all doing our own collections. I think we've collected so much that they don't need any more of what we're able to give.
Gotcha.
Because you got to think about, people have lost their entire livelihood.
Everything.
So we're giving supplies, and I think we've given so much supplies as an island, not just military, but like communities and everything. Mm-hmm. And people from the mainland where you're at have done the same. That I think we've overwhelmed them with the support at that level, but they need like industry stabilization. They need things to be rebuilt. And you got to think about it too. Hawaii is very expensive. So when all that goes away,
yes, it is.
It's crushing. And I mean, there was over 100 people that were killed as well. So it's crazy. It's
tragic.
And what's really insane is last week, I think it was Wednesday, we had one here on Oahu, a fire. It ended up going over a mile wide.
Wow.
And off of brush fire and winds. That's the same as the previous one week in Maui. And luckily, we have military on Oahu, and they were taking choppers and dropping water as firefighters were fighting, and they were able to contain it to where before it got too crazy. But like, some of my coworkers lived close to that. Luckily, it's far, far away from me. It's like 8 to 9 miles away from me. But like, that's great. It was really close to where I work too. The base, and we were losing power in certain spots. Luckily got contained. No lives were lost. But it just happens. And I look up. I was looking it up to try to find news to see, because like if it's gonna spread further, like we gotta act. And apparently, like 4 years ago, it happened. Same thing. Like, it just happens all the time because it's so dry out here.
Wow.
And I'm talking about certain parts of the island. There's other parts of the island that are just like beaches and wet.
Mm-hmm.
But there's certain parts where it's just dry as hell, like volcano areas. I'm crazy. Yeah, it's the thing is, though, national tragedies are insane. But yeah, we've definitely stepped up humanitarian assistance for that. It's been
good deal.
Crazy.
I was wondering about that.
Yeah, it's been in between all this fun stuff that, you know. Fortunately, though, I have had some time to play some video games. But I think before we transition to video games, Tristan, let's talk about what we got going on, because there's a certain book out there that's in its last 3 days, and by the time we launch it, it'll be last 2 days or one day.
That's correct.
By the time we launch this episode.
That's right. Video game
console collector's guide.
Yeah. So the video game collector's field guide, which I launched almost a month ago on Kickstarter, has been funded. We're looking.
And it's not about consoles. I literally just Freudian slipped consoles. It's video game collectors.
Yeah, it's about video games specifically. It's visual checklists, if you will, of like video game consoles, obscure and common. So, you know, you got the
as we're promoting it, I like to say it's like what I do for one console, but like everything.
Like, yeah, but you do it in depth. I don't.
This is insane, though. It's like such crazy, fun obscurity. It's like Gizmondo, right?
Yeah. And the Tapwave Zodiac and the Mega Duck and the Watara Supervision and, you know, stuff like that. So stuff you've never heard of, stuff you have heard of. And altogether, it's 2,400 pages across 4 volumes. But it's only available for 3 more days as of today. And yeah, like Jeff was saying, by the time we get this up, it's going to be 2 or 1 or maybe in its last day. And this is the only time you're going to get it discounted is on Kickstarter. So
that's the key right there. And I mean, you may offer it, you know, in sequential order. You may order however you offer it, however you want. So right now is the time to get the pre-order in for all 4 of the volumes. And a really, really a fancy slipcase, because
yes, this is the only time a slipcase is going to be available for the 4 volumes. The only time.
What we do is make badass slipcases around here. Like, that's one thing that we are doing that nobody can touch. And
that's right.
We're going to make some cool. And that slipcase, though, is going to be so ridiculous.
It's going to be a monster.
When I get my copy in the mail, I'm going to have to, like, you know, get a dolly to bring it into that. Just a copy of the book set.
And, you know, like, I think I mentioned this once before, that I had someone reach out to me because, you know, it's called a field guide. A field guide is traditionally a bird watching book, which is small and designed to fit in your pocket. Well, obviously, my field guide does not fit in your pocket, but that's the joke, guys. That's the joke. And especially at 4 volumes, a field guide. Maybe Jeanco jeans. Could you fit them in your pocket?
I think you could. They're so big. You just put them in the pant leg. It's awesome. It's fully funded already. And it was like, what, within the first like week, it was fully funded. And
It was fully funded within like 3 days.
Heck yeah. It's awesome.
Yeah.
And what kind of stretch goals were you offering? Has it hit any stretch goals?
No, it hasn't. So our first stretch goal is at 1500, and gosh, I wish I could remember off the top of my head. I actually sent out an update to all my Kickstarter backers explaining what the stretch goals are. And one of them was like a special section, and the other one was, I can't even remember. It's just been a blur, but
yeah.
I just like cool stuff.
Tech-based ones. Typically, I'm doing quality upgrades for whenever I do stretch goals, but it's literally to allow more copies to be printed, which then allow us to do more of these books because we have extra ones that can generate some extra money. So I can continue to do the upgrades. Because somebody was like angrily telling me, oh, well, I want you to do those upgrades. And I'm like, we're probably going to do the upgrades anyways. It's just we won't be able to do as much with them.
Mm-hmm.
I have to like limit it based on budget that we have from what we earn from the books.
That's right. It's not cheap. But, and right now it's really not cheap in this global economy. But yeah, we'll see.
And I did have on, I think it was my Switch Collector Volume 2 Part 2, I had a mean tweets on there, a mean comments on there.
Yeah,
you want to do some mean comments? It was, that guy was very angry. And
put him on blast.
My thing was, is I posted a nice reply, but essentially he didn't realize that even though it said it's a bridge, and I put down why it's a bridge and how we have to do it going forward.
That's on him, man. Like your video says it's abridged. Your video shows what's in it. Your entire campaign says it because he assumed.
And then there's screenshots of the actual book layouts.
Not only that, okay, if you saw abridged, unless you don't know what abridged means, then, you know, obviously you're going to think that something's abridged.
Exactly. That was very interesting that the person just backed it without reading anything, and then was talking about quality. So I'm like, well, just hit us up and we'll send you a replacement if something arrived damaged. Instead of the check mark stickers arrived. So, I mean, maybe it was folded when they shipped it. Well, then they just got to send them another one. Like, it's like that kind of stuff is like, you don't have to go and like say that this whole thing sucks because your copy arrived damaged by the USPS, which I don't know. Last time I checked, Tristan, neither of us are postmen. Like, yeah.
No. No, I don't like think not, so.
No. So, I mean, so we do not control that stuff, but we'll make it right. Like,
absolutely. And the thing, we'll always make it right. Come on, guys.
And a lot of people will, and I know this for a fact because people have said the same to me, is that the Kickstarter messaging is terrible. So if somebody sends me a message on Kickstarter, I don't get an alert. I don't get anything.
Yeah.
So I put in every update, please email me. I put my email in it. Mm-hmm. So that way people will email me, we'll knock it out. And there were like 6 or 7 people that hadn't gotten their book or something happened, and we fixed them all and we sent them. Mm. The craziest one, though, is there's a dude out in Brazil. We sent him his stuff a long time ago. He got a bunch of books. Ended up being a game developer, too.
Hey.
But he didn't get his stuff. And he's like, hey, where are my things at? Our shipping team, thank goodness Premium has a shipping team, sent me the USPS tracking number. So I send him the tracking number, and he goes there, calls the USPS. They say it's on hold because it has the wrong phone number, and that we have to now call Brazil's USPS to get the right phone number to them. But we don't speak multi-languages. We don't. So it was
we don't speak Portuguese, guys. I'm sorry.
Like,
I don't.
Like, fortunately, we also have, like, we're part of a video game publishing company, so we actually have people that do shipping and stuff. But, like, we're still small. But, like, imagine if just you and I are just authors, and now we have to run this holistic logistics on shipping and phone calls and crazy shit. Like, that's insane. So, like, we're still trying to make that stuff right, but it's like, like the shipping companies don't make it easy on us. And that's so I literally just said, hey, I'll have my team look into it. And I asked them. But like in the end, like we may just end up having to ship the books out again to them.
Yeah.
Hey, well, please give me your actual phone number when you give international shipping, because the dude didn't provide a phone number. The backer didn't provide a phone number. So he used like a default one. And now the guy who didn't provide a phone number saying it's our fault that it didn't go to him because he didn't provide a phone number.
The exact same thing happened to me, Jeff. Like, somebody backed a whole bunch of books. My last Kickstarter with a console collector's field guide and had add-ons of your stuff, your books. They wanted your books. So they all shipped at the same time, and they didn't. Yeah, it was a phone number that customs wouldn't, like, give up the shipment for. So it sat there. Even though, like, you know, and they couldn't contact the person to let them know that there was a problem. They don't contact us.
Nope.
They just don't. So it was shipped back. And the person's like wondering, you know, what's wrong? Well, you know, if you aren't thorough with your overseas shipping stuff, then this stuff is going to happen. So.
And a lot of it is like one offs, but it's like we try as much as we can. So it was funny, though. I got mean tweets on stuff and logistics, and it's like. I try to make it happen as much as we can.
I've actually never had anyone be downright nasty to me before. Like, well, no, I take that back. I had one person, but then he backtracked after I was like polite and stuff about it. He just assumed that I wasn't going to be nice and helpful, and I was. So
I don't know if that guy, the Mean Tweet guy, responded to my nice response and said, please just send me any emails. I don't think he did. I never got an email about it. I can't fix it if not, and I still haven't sent out a digital case yet to the backers or any of that because I'm waiting for everybody to get their books and be satisfied, and then I'm like, all right, here is your stuff. I'm also probably going to send out volume one and volume two part one just as a thank you for their patience before we do it. Yeah.
Heck yeah, dude.
And then Complete NES is in printing right now. I am working on getting – so every time we do a slipcase or something, I have them send me a brand new template from the printing facility because I don't trust just measuring it myself. That way they are printing it based on theirs. So I'm waiting for them to send me the slipcase so I can do a crazy-ass slipcase for it.
Nice.
I think I'm doing only a few. I'll have a couple extra, but I don't typically overprint.
I'll need one of those.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I was toying to do a pocket guide for it. It'll probably end up being its own Kickstarter because the amount of funds, again, we talk budgeting, the amount of funds that the game actually made covers the whole print run and everything, and it'll get some extra sales, which would be great. But I'll just offer it up because the other thing is Kickstarter is marketing. More people can see it too. So yeah, I'll offer the reprint of the paperback. The only thing was is that the quote I got was off of the over 500 pages that it is, and I'm probably not going to do everything in the paperback because it needs to fit in a pocket.
Yeah. An actual pocket guide, unlike mine.
Yeah, so that's pretty crazy. And then, of course, that transitions us into Nestember that's coming up. Oh, my goodness.
Nestember.
Premium NES month. So, essentially, before we hit our fall direct for our new series for Switch, we are going to have Premium Nintendo Entertainment System Month, where we have a couple of releases. One that we could talk about here is we have the second print that people have been asking for Ore Body Binder's Tale.
Yeah, buddy.
So those have been fully, because we assemble them by hand. They're fully assembled. They're in hand, ready to ship. So as soon as we put those up in September, those will be ready. However, we also have a brand new NES game that we haven't announced yet that's also going up in September.
It's so much fun, too. Oh, my gosh.
And it's, like, freaking awesome.
Yes.
We do have a few more games that we're planning on, probably post-holiday season, after the holidays, for a couple more NES games. That'll be really fun to do that we haven't announced either. But Nestember is going to be awesome. We'll also, put in some bundle deals and things with Bobby67. It's also up there. I think we're almost out of copies though for both, for what we have available. I love
that. That game is so much fun, and the humor in it and the music in it. Have I told you that, like, the trailer for that we put out during our direct, that like fully, I don't know. I don't know if that's a band or like somebody actually playing that theme song, but man, that is a banger of a song. Seriously.
So that is absolutely a band.
Okay.
They're called Weed and Stiff.
Oh, that's Weed and Stiff.
Called Legend of Weed and Stiff.
Yeah. Okay.
So Weed and Stiff, actually the developer of Bobby67 developed the Weed and Stiff games. But Clay, he's in the band Weed and Stiff, is like a joke.
That's
sick. His band, they actually did a reunion show near you, I thought, that was sold out. It was crazy. And I don't know if it was like a joke, because it was like sold out. It looked like something that was Photoshopped. I was like, if they're actually like that big, that's insane. So I thought they were a small little indie, like, that's local cool thing shit. In California that they lived in. Yeah, there was just like a crazy little band that they do, and plays the guy that was out here in Waikiki that I linked up with for Jinx like a few months ago. Mm-hmm. We talked about it at VGBS, like, so he was out here too. So yeah, I got all the details on his band and everything, and you know, keen listeners will understand that I just mentioned that there's an NES game associated with The Legend of Weedonstiff. So you know, do with that what you will. That's intel. but the thing is that it's super cool that is like that band though is really fun. And they did like a YouTube series where they would sit around like a little round table and do jokes and then play music a little bit. And like the Weedonstiff thing was also a YouTube channel for a while too. Yeah. It is very interesting knowing the history behind everything that they do. But the Hobby 6-7 is like the game he wanted to make.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, it's a really fun game. Like that's a legit NES game. That would have been something that we would have played back in the day.
Oh, big time. Oh, yeah.
One thing I don't know is, did I update the mock-up on the website for the Silver Edition? Because I don't think I did. I think I used some black and white version of the box. And like
On Trello, you mean?
No, on Shopify, on the website for the pre-order. On
Shopify, no. Yeah, I don't think that's updated.
So it's an artist that you know that she did what's her Instagram tag? Because she's on Instagram, right?
Oh, gosh. It's Soggy something.
Or something. Like Soggy. But
I hate that I don't remember off the top of my head. I feel bad.
As we do a little live research as I'm chatting about, but we did some amazing work to the point where, like, I want to do that as, like, a metal pin or something. But that's going to be the box for the Silver Edition. The box is going to be a silver foil, and then that art's going to be on the front with some silver embossing in our classic silver. Mm-hmm. But I feel like once we unveil that actual artwork, because it says art is subject to change on our website, with her art on it, it's going to be like, all right, it's gone. Because yeah. We don't do that thing.
Oh, yeah, seriously. It's not going to last long at all.
Mm-mm. Because it looks so awesome, and we are tempted to not even put like the name, because it's like 6 and 7 are in the background of the art piece, and we were going to not put the name, but I put a Bobby on there just so that way it's Bobby 6-7 is on there, the name of the game. But super crazy.
Forgive me for looking this up real quick.
I'll just stall it as much as I could, Tristan. Stop.
No worries. Oh, it's Soggy Art, and Soggy, it has a 0 for the O in Soggy.
So Soggy Art with a 0 for the O. Yeah. Super talented, and definitely look forward to more pieces as we do releases, because she's awesome and we'll definitely have more commissions with her.
Heck yeah.
We always support talented indie artists as much as we can. So
yeah, and she's a really good person too, so that really helps. We don't work with scrubs.
We don't work no scrubs.
Yeah.
You know what's interesting? So I was listening to a show on YouTube. It's the ones that were the Nintendo employees, Kit and Krista. And they had mentioned that they are doing a controller, a custom controller that was getting done with Kit and Krista for Switch. Ended up being that Captain Alex is doing it. Captain Alex is who did our pins for Pigeon Dev for the very first release. And I was like, oh, that's really cool. Like, Captain Alex is a good dude. Like, I was like super happy to see him get, like, he's elevated now. That's really awesome.
That's super cool.
Because we were initially toying with because he had this Nintendo Switch idea where he had Nintendo Switch pins. You could change out the metal pin to be the games, and we were going to release all our games.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Nintendo did not like the Switch piece on there, so they cease and desist because he liked to use it. So that's why we went with the TV theme we did for Pigeon Dev, and then after that we didn't do pins for a while, so we kind of didn't work with Captain Alex. But really cool to see that he's getting out there. It's really really cool. Yeah. All right, so anything else you had going on, or should we talk about like a teaser, an appetizer game that we've played before we get into the game of the month?
Nothing crazy, but I mean, like, are we going into like the games that we played? Because I've got a pretty epic one.
Oh yeah, no. So basically, our appetizer before we get into the main game is just something to wet the whistle of the listeners, and then at the end, after we finish our topics, we could talk about any other games. So since you said epic one, let's make the listeners wait, and I'll talk about my game. Yeah. I alluded to it the last recording, and I played it, so I have to read off of it, because it's been a little bit. So I played a game called RPG Time. I don't know if you've heard about this one.
Mm-mm.
So essentially, it is released physically on the Switch. It was released in Japan, but it's in full English. It is like somebody made their own role-playing video game in paper and pencil.
Oh.
On a Switch, and it flips between pages of the notebook as you play. There's a bunch of different – it kind of reminds me of more like a Super Mario RPG, but not really. Not graphics, though, but more so how it plays and how it intermixes genres as you play it. So it's like hand-drawn game, like a kid's story with a child doing narration as you play. So the kid's like reading it like a dungeon master almost, like talking about how he's creating the game world that you're playing through. And it has touchscreen interaction in there too, so you can touch the Switch's screen. The battle are only within the story, and every page you play, it all unfolds like a storybook. It has a gimmick to it. So like one, you'll be like trying to put out all these fires. Another one, you'll be trying to catch these moles, and another one, you're fighting a big boss that's going around. One of them,
really interesting.
It's super fun. There was an overhead mini tank game that you're driving this tank around. However, it was basically Legend of Zelda, but you're just in a tank.
It's RPG what now?
RPG Time.
Time. I think it's on I want to see some at least like pictures of it.
I think it's on PlayAsia for sales where I got it back in the day. Okay. But I initially had found out about it on my Steam Deck. But because it wasn't optimized for deck, I couldn't play it with the touchscreens and everything. So I bought the version on Switch.
Okay, and that looks amazing.
Game is awesome. Like, this is one that we might want to play in depth for an episode in the future.
That looks really cool.
And it has been in my backlog for a while to play. I played it. It was weeks ago before I went down my current path. It was one of the games that I put in after AEW was RPG Time. Because remember, AEW took Zelda out of my Switch. So then I put in RPG Time after that. And I played it an entire Sunday. I played it. And I haven't even scratched the surface with it. It is amazing. All the little bonus games are great. And it's like really like you can't lose. One of the cool things, though, is so it's like a story, right, Tristan? So as you're playing it, but on the page, every single page, there's a hidden ninja, little ninja, everyone. And so when you tap it, as soon as you're allowed to, because as you're playing through the story, but once you're on the screen, as soon as you tap it, it's like, found the ninja on the page, and it like does a little tracker. And I don't know what any of these trackers do or any of the stuff. It's just such a fun, you know, lighthearted game. And it is definitely great for kids, but it's great for us being retro nostalgic players.
Heck yeah, man.
Stuff that I would do with friends in class before the days of cell phones and all that, like when I was a kid back in the day with a piece of notebook paper. And it's like fully fleshed out. Like, man, it's so awesome. I want to play more of it for sure. And so I would not be adverse to us doing it for an episode in the future if you end up getting a copy or want to get a copy later.
Well, I don't know if you saw my eyes averted away from the camera a little bit.
As you click to buy it now, yeah.
I'm doing that right now, Jeff.
Episode live purchases. And so, like, the thing is, Tristan, right here in my handy-dandy premium edition
game. Oh, I'm so jealous of that. Can you have another one?
Made. RPG so cool. Time, and yes, I can. RPG Time is right.
So bad.
RPG Time is right here. And ironically, my daughter got back into Five Nights at Freddy's again because one of her friends at school is into it. Uh-huh. And I went to GameStop with her so she could get plushies. I ended up going, oh, there's three games that I wanted to get, but I only wanted to pick up one. I ended up picking up After Image. And I already have After Image. I already
Very
have it.
Cool.
So I got a copy of it on accident, so I have to take it back and swap it out to one of the other games. But RPG Time is right here, and it is a Japanese game, fully English, though. So
yeah, we need to talk about that case after the podcast.
Yeah, it has.
I'm going to throw some money at you.
Yeah, oh yeah. I will absolutely get you one of these cases, because this thing
amazing.
Is is awesome. It's a little book. But sir, and I have, you know, the classic ones you buy on Amazon where you open them up and they have all the stuff, but that's wooden. That one's so cool. And but I don't know if you noticed, but on the inside of this case here is all the premium releases in order. And
yeah, buddy.
Eagle Island and Love 3, and then number 13, which is Sunshine when it comes out. Number 13. So this right here gets through the first 16 premium releases. What number 16 is? Who's to say?
I'm gonna do that exact same thing when I get that game case, but I've done something a little bit different with all of our game releases. Since not all of them got you know, the deluxe edition treatment with the Neo Geo Shock boxes. I took it upon myself to get Neo Geo Shock boxes for every single one of our releases, and our retro fits inside of it. So on my shelf, I have a Neo Geo Shock box for every single one of them, and I'm making custom artwork for each of them.
How far is that away from you right now?
Oh, it's in the other room.
Okay. So next episode, I want to see one of them. Like a cool one.
If you want to stall for 5 seconds, I'll grab one.
Let's do it. I will stall.
Okay.
No, but see, the custom things like this that Tristan makes is so cool. And it's like, here's the thing. If people think that these custom shock boxes and stuff like this is cool, maybe we offer them on the website in a limited amount. Like, we always come up with cool stuff we want to do for like Thanksgiving and things. And so, so basically right now you're working on the art.
Yes, working on the art. I haven't printed out any of the like full, you know, wraparound stuff, but I do have the spines for each of them. So Rack and Ruin, that's our number 10 release.
Yeah, did I give you the template yet?
Maybe. We'll have to talk about this.
And if I didn't, I would recommend that we maybe offer this for like a Thanksgiving, like Black Friday sale or something, and
That'd be really cool. Only
the printed sheets.
Yeah.
Or we offer the digital files for a price, print sheets for one. And because, like, getting the shock cases take up a lot of space, so we wouldn't be able to store all those. But offering that.
See, our retro fits right inside of the shock box. So.
Yes, it does.
Perfect size.
That's exactly why we use them for our deluxes. I literally did all that measurement and stuff, and then it fits one CD or one item on top of it. So that's why initially with Pigeon Dev and Robot Name Fight that both had a deluxe, they were a sleeve instead of the jewel case for the disc, because the jewel case does not fit perfectly, but the sleeve does.
Oh.
And then we put a little tchotchke on the top of it, which was that Denalix pin that was in the Pigeon Dev one.
That's right.
Yep. So, yeah, really, really awesome. I love the custom projects like that, though. That's perfect. So,
well, you can't turn our brains off. We're always making stuff that we want. So if we make cool shit that we want, then obviously someone else out there wants it, too.
So let me take your idea and make it insane. So I think we should have a consistent spine for all of them, like what you did for Rack and Ruin. So if you show again the spine, we have the premium on the top, the number on the side, and then the logo, just like that. I think that's awesome.
Yeah, and it looks so good on the shelf right next to each other. Yeah,
and even the ones you have shock boxes for, you could do a custom Tristan one. So that way, if somebody didn't buy the deluxe and they bought the retro, they could put the standard in there. They could put whatever in there. I think that'd be cool. And then some kind of unifying front art that isn't necessarily, you know what I mean? Like, if we had one artist that did their interpretation.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Like Soggy doing her interpretation of every single game. We do it slowly. We wouldn't do the whole set for Black Friday, but maybe we do series one or series one and two.
Oh, and then man, that's a cool idea. See, this is why you guys listening to this podcast, you're getting this as we think of it.
Cool stuff, cool ideas. And the thing is that's what we like to do. Is like, that would be freaking dope. And I would absolutely put that in, because I mean, I'm a Neo Geo collector. Put it in my collection on like on a bookshelf, big old bookcase. That's like a top of a bookshelf type of thing, and it would look badass.
Yeah,
dude. I would say we get away from offering like a continuing art on the side of it. I think just logos and consistent spines, just because if we never end with releases, which is a good idea, you don't want the art to end and start like the Dragon Ball Z thing where you had multiple arts. But I think doing a consistent spine, even for the ones we've released, would be dope, especially if the art is done by a singular artist. I mean, imagine if, like, Paul Niemeyer was available, but she's so busy doing conventions, he wouldn't be. But, like, Paul Niemeyer's. That's why I'm like, Soggy's art's awesome. I think that would be a cool
one. Well, and Soggy's so multifaceted. Like, she can emulate other artwork. And you know, Neo Geo, I wish I knew the artist's name. Oh, crap. I had one around here. Sorry, one second.
Neo Geo. And the thing is like, I love that we have all the items.
Yeah, so Toshiaki Mori does the traditional, like, SNK style artwork that you see on Neo Geo stuff. So I wonder if Soggy could emulate his artwork style.
Oh, I think that would be cool. Would that apply to every game? Maybe. The other thing, the best thing I've had with artists, though, is let them go ham.
Yeah, true.
Let their don't want to pigeonhole. Go, and don't want to pigeonhole the pigeon death. But I do like the idea of emulating a Neo Geo style as well. So be like, hey, you know, this is on a Neo Geo case, but we want what your version, what you think when you play the game without trying. Because I didn't want her to even use the key. Like, I wanted to, like, see the game, they bleed pixels, and do her version of it.
Yep.
I wanted to see the game. And I think offering it in sets would be really, really dope. And if people like it, they like it.
Yeah.
Basically, it's for us. Like, let's not get it wrong.
Oh, yeah. No, I make this stuff for
myself
me.
Now, damn it. I want a copy for myself now, damn it. Like,
I make this stuff for number one.
Exactly. And that's the thing that's dope. I mean, we're looking to do premium Aloha shirts eventually. Like, I'm going to design them just because I want one.
That's
so
cool.
It's going to happen.
Look what this guy did. I love jerseys. So
exactly. So waiting for one, Tristan. I need one.
Yeah, I know.
I'll get you a bookcase. You get me a jersey. And we'll,
all right. I just need your size is all. Because I think mine's a little bigger. It'd be a little big on you.
I say an extra large, man.
There you go.
That's what I do for everything. It'll be a little bit bigger, but I mean, I'll wear it. And thing is, even that style, that's now I call that the classic Tristan design. That's fine. That's cool. Yes. I think it's dope. It just gives branding. It's really awesome. And the thing is, speaking of awesome and branding, we were just at Game On Expo in Phoenix, Arizona. Scott had for the first time Tristan's new banner behind him.
Yeah.
So freaking cool. Like, oh my God. Like, it was behind him on the thing. It has the classic logo.
Actual logo.
Because, like, the original one you made was just for, like, fun. And you had, like, the retro premium logo on everything. Yeah. Now we're like, hey, we need one for the actual convention. So you put PlayStation and Nintendo, and it looks so dope. It's so cool. And
thank you.
And we have lanyards at that convention that look awesome.
Yeah.
So I didn't get one yet because
I was going to ask you if you got one yet. No?
No. So our team shipped out all the games to all the team members, but mine come directly from the factory so I could check to make sure there's no errors.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
And so I didn't get a care package. So they're sending me a package eventually with that in it. I'll wear that for work. I mean, hell.
I currently am wearing one for work.
Mm-hmm. That's what I want to do. I want to wear it
for work. So US Stratcom is representing premium edition games. One person, and I'm biased, but you know, whatever.
So that's the thing, and so went off on a long tangent of cool shit that premium can do. But RPG Time is a really awesome game. Would have been one that I would have happily signed for a physical, but I'm glad that it's preserved and in English. It's right on the cartridge.
Yeah, that's really cool. I can't wait to get it. And we will definitely have to play with that game. That'll give me an excuse.
I want an excuse to fire it back up. Like, no joke. I do want to.
Looks so really cool.
Now we've officially stalled for a long time for your epic game you played.
Yes.
Not about, because I've been teasing myself because I don't even know what it is. All right. So I'm going to hear what this epic game is.
31 years ago, Jeff. 31 years ago, 10-year-old Tristan Ibarra started Metroid 2. I got stuck as a child in that game. I could not beat it. I had all the maps from Nintendo Power. I had the manual. I didn't have any friends that were playing the game, so I couldn't, like, bounce ideas off of anybody. Fast forward 31 years. I just beat Metroid 2 for the first time 2 days ago.
Oh, so you're talking original Game Boy.
My copy, your my workout. Save file. I put in my analog pocket, and it was still there. And I beat the game 31 years later.
Hell yeah. That's amazing. So what did you learn that you know now that as a kid stumped you?
It was a frustrating aha moment, let me tell you. And it comes down to grammar. So stay in school, kids. Stay in school. The instruction booklet under the gravity boots say that you have a perpetual jump. Perpetual jump, Jeff. Meaning that you can keep jumping. I didn't know that as a kid. So I had everything that I needed to beat the game, but didn't know that I could keep jumping.
Which is something that if you're familiar with Super Metroid, you eventually get the space jump as well. Yeah. Original
space jump. Did I call it the wrong thing? Gravity boots, space jump?
No, I think it is called gravity boots in Metroid 2.
Okay.
I want to think it is. I mean,
I don't have it in front of me, so if I'm getting that wrong, I apologize. But you guys know what I'm talking about. Yeah, you jump, and then you can jump again, and you can jump again perpetually.
Mm-hmm. To do it in the rotation.
Yeah. It's odd timing. It takes some getting used to. But I didn't know that was a thing 31 years ago as a 10-year-old child playing on my Game Boy, DMG screen in poor lighting. I played the shit out of that game, and I was so frustrated. I could not beat that game, so I just put it down, and I never picked it back up again.
And see, I did it back in the day, and I played the hell out of it. I used to use the spider ball and just go around every crevice of the entire map and do all that stuff. And
yeah,
I mean, I definitely beat it back in the day, but I don't recall details of me beating it because I'm great with long-term memory. I'm better with short-term.
I was saying, I accomplished something that I will never be able to replicate because I don't have any other games that have been on the backlog for that long.
Damn.
31 years later.
That is crazy, but it's congratulations that you finally overcame that mountain.
Thank you. It feels great. It feels great. It really does.
That is an epic accomplishment. And
yeah.
It's like the aha moment's the classic, though. It's like, oh, I can just keep jumping.
I'm like, you're telling me this whole time I can keep jumping?
In 30
Are
years.
Are you kidding me? I was incredulous.
See? Incredulous perpetually.
Yeah. Stay in school, kids.
Hey, stay in school. My goodness. That is awesome that you were able to finally beat it. I remember a couple recordings ago I talked about I had played Legend of Zelda Link to the Past Super Metroid Randomizer, right? Yes.
Yeah.
And at that point, I had gotten used to the Super Metroid spin jump, where you can do the wall jumps, and you have to use the wall jumps for certain things based on item placement, because now you're not getting items in the order they expected you to. Within the last week, I went back to Robot Name Fight to play because I hadn't played in a while, and I love that game. I always like to fire it up every once in a while. I can't do the damn wall jump now.
Oh no!
And it was easier. The wall jump and fight was easier than Super Metroid, and now I can't do it. Because I'm so used to doing it the actual Super Nintendo way, I have to unlearn that, relearn how to wall jump and fight. It's like crazy to me. Like, unless there's something that I'm not tracking where maybe it has to be unlocked, the wall jump later, and I'm still too early on my Steam Deck file, because I had, that's a new file, whereas the Switch version I've been playing for years. But I just could not for the life of me do the wall jump. Cause there's spots where when you get to the Mega Beast, there's like a big vast opening above you, and if you wall jump, you can get to a couple of the enemies and kind of farm some scrap. And I just couldn't get up there. I'm like, damn, I want to freaking wall jump up the little bit of spot so I can. Nope. So yeah. So wall jumps too are a thing, Tristan. They're a thing.
I just like you were saying, you don't remember too much about Metroid 2. I know I've beat Super Metroid, but I don't remember a whole lot of it. So couldn't tell you if I had any trouble with the wall jumps or not.
That is freaking classics, though. All right, so should we go into the game of the episode?
Sure.
Awesome. So let's do what I would call laying the wallpaper, so we can talk about the game and exactly what it is. So so we're talking about Gale Guardian's Demon's Purge. Mm-hmm. I had played it on the Nintendo Switch, and you played it. Nintendo Switch?
Also Nintendo Switch.
I originally downloaded it for the Steam Deck, but I was having issues with it running. It would not run for me. So I would have played it a long, long time ago. But then when I realized that it wouldn't work on Steam Deck, I put it on the backlog.
Yeah.
But when you talked about it, I was like, all right, I need to buy it. And so I put it on my Amazon cart and actually didn't buy it until like last week. And so I finally got it in and was able to play it this weekend. So this is what we'll talk about. Whenever we do these games, we're not going in super depth. We may or may not have beaten it. It's like an appetizer type of thing where we talk about our experiences and how we feel as retro gamers when we play the game.
Yeah.
So essentially, this game is a Metroidvania-style game. And it says, when a demon's castle darkens the land, two sisters challenge its halls. Together, they can break the curse. In order to save their school, it turns into a massive demonic castle. Two demon hunter sisters shoot and slash away through this 2D action adventure. Players can swap between control of both characters on the fly, each with entirely different skill sets.
Yeah.
Proceed to the castle while confronting demonic bosses that await deep within. Each boss yields new weapons to wield, allowing for a more varied exploration, opening up new worlds. And you get to swap out on the fly. And as one character dies, you get transported, in single player mode at least, get transported back to the previous save point in order to rescue them, and you kind of do like CPR on them.
Yeah.
So let me give my initial one, and then I got questions for you since you played it way more than me, I assume. So essentially, I'm calling it a Metroidvania, but more so, it is linear with minor backtracking. As you play through bosses, it unlocks a new portion of the castle, Castlevania style, and it shows like the little path, like Rondo of Blood, where they'll show like splitting paths and things. You can use these totems or these pillars to warp back to the beginning of a previous area. However, don't do like me. After the first boss, use the first pillar you come to, go back to the beginning of the first level, because you haven't opened up the second level yet. You can't warp to it.
Correct.
I literally did that and then had to run through the entire first level again to get back to the end of the first level because I had warped back too early and then just go through the next hall first and then go back.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, they should have definitely unlocked the next area first before they put you in that hall.
I have something to add to that, and I'll wait until mine.
Go ahead, add to it. Let's add to as we go.
Okay, so that whole thing. Now, if on the second stage boss, you get to him a certain way, and after you beat it, if you do that same thing and you warp back to the beginning, having not gone to the third stage yet, you can't go back to that same boss area the same way you got there. So I thought that I had
on, right?
I thought that I had soft locked myself. So if you don't know how to get back to the boss without going the same way you went the first time, then it feels like a soft lock.
Yeah, and that is so weird. I call the and the thing is that, like, how did you end up getting to that area again the second time?
So on the second boss, it's that, you know, you go on those like chandeliers and then they crash onto the stage. So that's how you get to the boss the first time. Well, you actually have to fall down a pit and then go underneath where you went the first time.
So is that like a bad game design?
It is terrible game design.
Because pits in the game kill you like Castlevania, not like a Metroidvania where pits go down to the next stage.
Yeah.
So,
it is absolutely bad game design on that part.
Just that spot you have to fall down. So there's spots where you fall down and there's spots that kill you when you fall down. So to me, that is bad game design. And so there's a little bit of frustration that I've had with this game, Tristan, just a little spoiler. But I'll ask questions to you, too, to maybe, since you played it a little bit more, maybe you can help reinvigorate, even though the description of the game doesn't necessarily lend itself to answering what I want to happen in the game as I progress. So I call it the two characters swapping is a gimmick. One of the characters, she has long range shooting a gun, but it's weak. And then the other character has a big old powerful sword attack, but has a weaker health. So it's like half the health bar.
Yeah.
The other one.
Strong slash, weak health bar.
Exactly. They all have sub weapons. So you start off with one that can shoot a little knife upward. And then the gun character, so you can hit things diagonally up. Yeah. And then your sword wielder, she gets like a little like Mega Man style orb around to protect you for a certain amount of time. And actually, if you activate the orb and then switch characters, the other character keeps the orb as well, which is nice. So you can kind of
realize that.
Yeah.
I don't think I ever tried that.
Yeah, I mess around with stuff. I break games usually when I do stuff like that. But I wanted to do that. I wanted to see. It was cool, though. For the graphical perspective, though, a graphics freaking awesome, dude. Like 16-bit, 32-bit.
Oh, it's absolutely Symphony of the Night like style.
Yeah, even the point of the graphical effect artifacting when your characters move.
The ghosty jumps and stuff, like the trailer. Yeah, the trail behind you.
That type of stuff is outstanding. Something similar with the Scarlet's game as well, the Scarlet Symphony game that also some Metroidvania style that had the same style.
Oh, yeah. I broke down and bought that one.
I have a copy. I haven't really played. It's a short game, so that might be another one for the future. We love our Metroid. We love our action RPGs. And then the music, definitely Vania inspired.
100%. Like, no denying.
So, how far I've gotten? I have beaten three bosses now and just gotten to the fourth area. So I've gotten a few different power-ups. Here's my first major gripe with the game.
Okay.
As I play through the game, it doesn't feel like there's enough to make me want to go back. There's only a couple of little secrets here and there that make you want to backtrack to make it a true Metroidvania. Yeah. To me, it makes it more of a Castlevania game where I'm going to play through it a few different times.
Mm-hmm.
And the power-up so far, and this is where I wrote here, not a huge fan of the power progression so far. It basically gives both characters at the same time a new weapon or traversal option at the same time, which means you don't get like one thing and get to master it. You get two things. And then the next level wants you to master the two things. So after the first one, it gave me a little grenade that I could lob or roll on the ground to kill people with the shooter. And then with the slasher, it gave me these little paper mache birds. And at a certain point, you're in a water area, you can put the paper mache bird on it and like traverse on it, and you can use it to go like over gaps and things to fall into
that
your
one. That one used a ton.
Yeah. And then after I beat the second one, I want to say that there was a penguin that freezes bosses, which I assume you use as platforms. I can't remember what the other character got. It was another type of weapon, though.
I can't remember.
Landmine that you put down, and then you can shoot it, and it blows up.
That's right.
Not super useful. But either
I
way,
never
though,
used it once.
Yeah. And I assume you have gotten further than the third level at this point.
I have.
You may have beaten the game, I assume. I've gotten close. Okay. So to me, being a Castlevania stalwart, but also being OCD, I have never been a fan of the sub-weapons because I always conserve them because I don't want to run out of hearts.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, to have to use certain sub-weapons as traversal options has been having to unlearn the way I've gamed for the last 40 years and try to replay it. Now, the questions I have for you, since you've played further than me. Do the characters get more of a life bar or have more powerful weapons later on? So, like, their main gun and their main sword, do those power up? And do you get more of a life bar in the future?
Yes, you do get more of a life bar. Yes, you do get a bigger ammunition clip.
Thank goodness, because that was my one thing is, like, man, if I just get all these extra weapons and I don't get a bigger clip or a more powerful sword.
You do not get a more powerful sword.
Ah. See, because, like, to me, it's like, I always love the thing about
Metroid. Okay. No. I take that back. You do get a more powerful sword. You do get a more powerful gun. Yes.
Okay. Because I love being able to, like, progress and level up the characters. And if that's the case, that makes me want to keep going.
I take it back. Yes, you do.
Okay. That's good, though. That's excellent. And then the other question is, is there things like a traditional double jump eventually, or do I have to just use the power-ups?
It's only power-ups.
Damn. Because, like, for example, we're talking Super Metroid that, you know, these Metroidvanias took inspiration from. Mm-hmm. You use the Super Metroid, you get the freeze beam, right? Where you freeze the enemies to jump on them, right? So that's how you do your double jump. Eventually, though, you get a progressive jump, Tristan. You get the space jump eventually, where you can continually over.
It is perpetual. Where do the day kids? Perpetual. Yeah.
Peter Herman. Hats off, Paul Reubens.
Yeah, that's right, Paul Reubens.
But that's the thing, though. So, like, it's missing some tropes. So we're talking about, like, you know, stuff we would have preferred from a game design aspect that even Super Metroid did, which is you literally give you the little penguin thing to freeze people. Now you have to use those perpetually in order to you know, traverse the levels, which because the game design isn't super buried for backtracking in a Metroidvania style, I guess it's not as big of a deal. But if they open it up later to more complexities, it's going to be frustrating.
Yeah. I will say that
And now, spoiler territories, you can go ahead and talk about how far you've gotten and your thoughts, too.
You want me to spoil?
Hell yeah.
Okay, well.
Because I want you to get me excited so I go back in and play up to where you're at.
Okay, cool. It is cool.
We're going to get the list. Because the thing is, right now, I'm at the point where I'm probably not going to get back to it and sit in my backlog because I was kind of like, it's okay. I mean, grinding through the bosses and dying and going back a few times, but then just realizing I can go with the sword and slash the shit out of it and then back off, switch characters, and then shoot it a little bit and then do a little bit.
There's definitely strategy that you have to use, you know,
because I think it was the third or the fourth. Yeah, the third boss had a second form. It froze everything, and then you go through it again. But I was able to, like, cheese it a little bit the second or third time because I didn't care because I could just come back to life. Now, mind you, I played it in casual mode because I'm a filthy casual.
Whatever.
Yeah, no it's lives. Whatever. No lives. But
it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you have lives or not, honestly. Like, I've never been close to, like, losing all my lives. I have double-digit lives right now, and I'm playing normal mode or whatever
you want to call it. Exactly. Yeah, so how far did you get, Tristan?
I'm actually three stages in to the second half of the game.
Woo, there's a second half.
Just like in Metroidvania fashion or Symphony of the Night fashion, there's a twist. Not inverted. So what happens is there's that demon girl that, you know, you're introduced to at the beginning of the game. She's the end boss. But then. Of the first half.
Yeah.
And then you wake up her adult form, her future form. And that's who you have to fight at the very end.
That's cool.
So those pillars that you transport yourself between, That's actually a student that's been kidnapped and transformed into the castle.
Weird.
And in order to save him, and here's the Japanese anime creepy Japanese part, you have to get things that excite him. So you have to go find a girl's panties and a girl's tights. And a, yeah, it's like, not so yet, you
quite the play this so far has even alluded to like pervertedness.
No, yeah,
so getting panties.
You're like, really? Come on, guys. Like, you couldn't, like, we're doing this, huh? Okay.
I mean, it is part of the Gun Gal, Gal Gun series that is perverted, so it makes sure. Sense.
It's whatever.
It's funny though.
Feel however you want about it, but that's what you're doing now is you're going back to each stage and then having to beat the bosses again with your power ups. So you are powered up. Like they power up your sword. You have a charge attack now.
Oh, where, cool!
Like you charge it up and then like unleash this gigantic. Like gear that like or saw blade that like you shoot out and it like stays on the screen for a while and does a whole bunch of damage. Or whenever you're shooting the gun, after like a couple seconds of holding fire, like missiles start shooting out.
Also, did they ever update the, because we didn't even talk about it, but when you press the Y button and the characters come together and they shoot out a giant demon clearing bullet, did they ever?
I've never seen a different attack other than that one. It is cool, but
and
like,
somehow I've always timed it so the enemies, the bosses will like jump all around, and I'll like hit the button, and all of a sudden the enemy gets right into it as the bullet comes to it.
Yeah,
and
that's pretty cool. Yeah, because the bullet like moves really slow, and then boop.
And it, like I've never missed a boss. I've missed enemies, but I've never missed the boss.
Sure. Yeah, no, there's definitely a reason to replay the game. It's I mean, aside from the pervertedness, it gives you a reason to go back into certain stages and then find those items.
But you say that we don't have to backtrack when you're playing the game until you get to that point, so it just gives you the reason to do it yourself.
Correct.
That's actually good to know because it gives me less anxiety that I don't have to backtrack at all.
Yeah, no, it's really not a Metroidvania game. It's more like Rondo of Blood. If you're going to compare it to a Castlevania game,
which actually that's way cooler to me. That's way cooler to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I am going to beat this game. You know, like I said, I'm like three or four stages into the second half of the game. I think I've got three of the five items that you have to find to help this kid out. And then, you can fight the adult version of this demon girl.
Jeez, that's awesome though. Yeah, I mean, I was leaning on the fence of not going back because of it didn't quite click with me from a Metroidvania, but the fact that it's more Castlevania Rondo Blood makes me wonder.
I would call it Rondo, not Metroidvania. It's not a Metroidvania game.
Yeah, I may continue it now. See, so I'm glad that he talked about the different aspects because of the way that it unlocks is actually more conducive to a video game versus an open-ended. Yeah. Story, so that'll be awesome.
No, it's cool. It's done well, but yeah, there are little things just like you were talking about and I was talking about that they could have done better from a design perspective, and that's why it's so important for devs.
I was gonna say, how many times do you have to fall down a pit and it doesn't kill you now because you already found one?
There's several Jeez. Different stages where that happens.
Is there an indicator?
No indication.
Like, come on, devs.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, man, visual. It sucks.
Some little subtlety, something.
Like, I remember in Shine, it would be like, there would be, like, little things down there when you could fish down there.
Yeah, Yeah, little bubbles coming up or something. Something.
Jeez.
Some little visual clue.
Bam. But you said, like, it's definitely worth finishing up, so yeah,
it is.
I will keep it in my premium edition games bookcase and it will stay in there.
Cool.
Yeah. That's awesome. So yeah, transition into now the topic. We'll call it Tristan's. Yeah.
So I thought it'd be interesting to talk about, you know, cause we're about the same age. And, when we were in high school, the Nintendo 64 was just coming out, 96. When did you start your freshman year?
97.
97? Okay.
96, 97, yeah.
96, 97, yeah. So we were the same year. You graduated in 2000 like I did? Yeah, same. So, you know, high school, whenever we had our first jobs, our first income, whatever, it was whenever the N64 had just come out in that September. You know, generally you have a lot more leeway and freedom that your parents give you to go and hang over at your friends' houses or stay the night or whatever. And you got to have something to do. N64 had four controller ports.
Blows your
mind. And it was the I would argue the first game console that really introduced the party game. So I would love to talk about party games and party fouls, like our stories and experiences with some of those N64 and Dreamcast party games that you know, maybe upset our friends if something happened, because, you know, we played Mario Kart and Mario Party and GoldenEye and those WCW games
and WWE Warzone. And so
there were plenty of heated moments and hurt feelings. And
so
it's
like,
just great to talk about.
If you think about it, too, it's almost like it was a perfect storm, because I don't recall partying or having game parties or having any of that back in the day before that with Super Nintendo with NES. Like, I would play with my buddy Kenan, with my buddy Eric. We would play NES. We would play Super Nintendo. He had Sega.
I think maybe in there's one exception, and it's not one that I was a fan of, but I always hear that people would play like Saturn Bomberman.
So we never had Saturns, like even the rich kids.
Or TurboGrafx Bomberman, or whatever.
Saturn Bomberman, though, was a Nintendo Age staple. So every year at Nintendo Age Campout, we would have a Saturn Bomberman tournament, and we'd play with all the players maxed out, and we played out in the – because they would have a gaming tent set up outside of Paul Sargent's house, Paul from Nintendo Age. And we would have, like, video game boxes of all NES games, every box for NES games. And we would have game tournaments going. And we would play Saturn Bomberman every year, too. That's the only time I remember playing that. And that's much later. In 2012 was the first camp out I went to. That's, 11 years ago now, which is crazy. But, like, I didn't have a Saturn back in the day. Didn't know anybody who had one. TurboGrafx, we had the rich kids in the neighborhood that had one, but nobody was playing multiplayer on it.
I think we all had one friend that had a TurboGrafx, and I had that one friend, too.
And, like, but then, like, they didn't have the multi-tap or didn't have the
games
for the, like, we'd play and we'd hand over the controller.
So
but that's when we transitioned over to 64, though. All of a sudden, and we ended up being in that perfect age range to want to play it.
In
high school and, you know, junior high school era is like when you're key to wanting to play and do sleepovers still and hang out and party and and we really didn't do it for PlayStation much, even though I had a multi-tap.
I think the difference is that, I mean, yeah, all these different consoles, like the NES, I think even the Genesis had a multi-tap. But anyway, all these ones that had multi-taps, it was an afterthought. With the N64, it was built in, and they built the games around four-player and multiplayer. It was meant for it.
I have a theory why you're not the biggest fan of 64, because you're not, and you've said it in multiple episodes.
I'm not. It's no secret.
Here's the thing, is that, like, it goes back to why I bought a Sony PlayStation. So I was a Nintendo fan. I bought only Nintendo stuff. So I got the N64 on launch. But because there was a focus on multiplayer in the classic Nintendo fashion, like even with the Wii, they had a focus on the motion controls. Because they had a focus on multiplayer, the single player experience took a hit. So I was waiting for the next WCW game to come out, or whatever the hell I was waiting for to come out that I was excited about, which are typically multiplayer games. And I was like, there was a big drought And that's when I bought my PlayStation, which was like right before Final Fantasy VII was released. I got my PlayStation. But I literally got it because I was working at the time in high school. I was working a job, had money, and I was like waiting for games. And I'm like, all right, games are $60. At that point, I saved up enough and I could get a PlayStation. So I bought a PlayStation and got some games. And it was like literally the drought because Nintendo focused on multiplayer. So you get these sprinkles of single player experiences that were released, but they were few and far between. So when you waited between Mario to get over to Shadows of the Empire, that was in like that first era. But to get to the Banjo-Kazooie was like years. Like it was a long time in between. And then when you're talking the twilight of the 64, I think at that point we were basically done with high school. And we are moving on to college. And the GameCube is being released at that point, and PlayStation 2 and all that stuff. And we were making an era change at the end of 64. So by the time a lot of the really epic 64 games were released, we were already out of the loop. But when a game was a banger, it was a banger for 64, especially when like a Blast Corps was released. Like that was outstanding, but there was nothing else to compare it to. Like we were kind of in a gaming drought, if you will, but these party games is what made the 64 amazing, and those stories, and that's not something we could recreate right now. Even with Switch Online, you can't recreate sitting next to someone. And I got some crazy ass stories. I got crazy Kyle stories that he cannot refute because he is
not here to defend himself, poor guy.
But it was there's some classic stories, man. Like, am I close to maybe cracking the Tristan nut of the N64 hatred? Because, like, to me, it's like it's honestly not your fault. It's Nintendo's fault for being focusing.
Yeah, honestly, I feel like at this point I should like lay down on a couch with a therapist and figure out what my deep seated hatred is for it.
I don't think it's a problem. Honestly, I don't think it's a problem. I think it's more like, you're not wrong. It's just that there's only a few games out there that are epic that hold up. And almost
during that era,
they're at least better now.
Yeah. And during that era, you know, I was I didn't go out and buy a PlayStation. Just randomly one day, my dad came home with a PlayStation. He had traded some like computer equipment to a friend of his and came home with a PlayStation and some games. Just out of the blue. And like, you know, it wasn't really on my radar at all. I wasn't like a huge, huge gamer at that point. But that's how I ended up with a PlayStation. And
Sony was smart because they dual gimmicked everything. So PlayStation had a CD player, PlayStation 2 had a DVD player, PlayStation 3 and onward had the Blu-ray player.
Yeah.
And so they gimmicked it. So like I literally got the PS2 because I had a DVD player. That's the only reason I got it that early. PlayStation, though, happenstance, man. Happenstance.
But, like, you know, you're coming out of the Super NES era with, like, all those awesome JRPGs like Breath of Fire and Chrono Trigger and Final Fantasy 2 and 3, or 4 and 6, respectively. And then, you know, they put out the N64, and you got, what, fucking Quest 64? Thanks for that. Like, what?
And Bomberman Hero.
Yeah.
Yeah, and nothing. They had nothing.
Pardon my French. Anyway, I we cuss every once in a while, but slipped out. My hatred for the 64 is deep.
I mean, you got to think about it. Shoot 'em ups. You had space. Was it Soldier Blade? Or
yeah. So like these genres that we're used to seeing on the Super Nintendo and PlayStation, they just weren't a thing on the N64. So it was a very specific. User base that they're building this console around. And it didn't age well, I think. At the time, it was awesome because you had the couch versus couch co-op, but that's just not a thing anymore.
And if you think about it, too, they also had the drastic change to polygonal graphics that were still so they weren't refined, and that you didn't get all these awesome pixelated games. You only got a few sprinkled in for both PlayStation and 64. Kind of why the Japanese Sega Saturn was badass back in the day, because there was a lot of pixelated games. But in America, they went straight toward polygons. And, you know, some of it does not hold up well.
No, it's some pretty ugly, muddy graphics nowadays.
Nope.
Even upscaled.
That's why the focus of talking party games is awesome. And I even have stories from – I have stories from 64. I got stories from the Wii era, and I have stories from the 360 era, and then modern, because, I mean, we do family game night to this day, and there's some new stuff that are perfect for couch co-op.
Oh, the Switch is amazing for it.
Mm-hmm. And I didn't even do – this last one I didn't even do on the Switch, so I got a perfect – but let's start with 64. Like, what was one of your favorite game party memories?
I grabbed a stack over here, and we'll go with this guy right here, Mario Party.
Ooh,
party game. Mario Party. Oh boy, was it the start of some. And I wouldn't say fights, but arguments. So Mario Party, the original, and I'm going to ask you about something whenever it comes time, because this was news to me. I never heard of this before, and I'll ask you whenever I come to it. But, you know, Mario Party is a board game I can't imagine anyone listening to this has never heard of Mario Party or hasn't played it before. But essentially, you gain coins in order, by doing mini games, and the coins enable you to purchase power ups in order to get stars, which are the end game. Person with the most stars at the end of the game, at the end of whatever turns you predetermine, is the winner. So stars are the only thing that matters in the end. There were some mini games in the first Mario Party. They tried, you know, doing all these different kinds of gimmicks, like timing based things and, you know, using the controller in all different ways, shapes and forms. But there was one in particular that actually caused some injuries. And that's, you know, exactly what I'm talking about. You put the joystick in the palm of your hand. And you have to rotate it in, you know, around in a circle as fast as you can.
Call it Commodore 64 summer and winter games trauma. Like, come on.
Oh, that you got to do games, that too.
This is how you run. This is how you run in summer games.
No.
Forearm workout. You have to go back.
No.
And same thing with Konami Track and Field. And you do the same thing with the buttons. You go back and forth with the joystick because there's only one button. So you run.
The fastest way to do these particular mini games like Paddle Battle, which puts three, basically you're in a boat, you're going down a river, and there are shy guys, these like shy guys with spears on either side of the river. And you have three people on one side of the boat and one person on the other side of the boat, and you have to paddle to the other side so that they get stabbed with spears. And you know, like everybody's just going, I mean, like with the palm of their hand, and like eventually you'd get blisters or start bleeding. And it was actually the subject of a class action lawsuit against Nintendo because of these injuries. Did you know this? I've never heard of that before.
I've definitely heard that people got hurt from it. Now, here's the irony. Never played the Mario Party games back in the day.
Really?
We never rented them. We never had them. Never rented them. So my controllers were all intact because it ruined controllers, too. Broke a lot.
Oh, like dude. Yeah, it was so bad on them.
The market with the little weak-ass joysticks is from Mario Party games.
Yes.
It's not from anything else. It's just from Mario Party because you gotta you're basically like mishandling the controllers.
Yeah, right? Breaking them. Absolutely breaking them.
But I know for a fact because I mean, heck, when you go out and do yard work after you hadn't done it in a while and you're digging in your yard and doing a bunch of post hole digging or whatever, like your hands get destroyed, and that's why we wear gloves. So if Nintendo didn't tell gamers to wear gloves, then they're bad because you're gonna ruin people's hands.
Yeah, so they had the class action lawsuit, and if you actually like wrote to Nintendo, then they would send you a glove. And apparently it wasn't like a Nintendo branded glove or anything like that, because they're not out there. But I would love to see a picture and some evidence of like what the glove looked like with that Nintendo letter that came with it or whatever.
I just assume, like, I think about it like the dude from the Power Glove, and he like it has fingers.
Well, it's got a fingerless or whatever, fingerless gloves.
Yeah, and like little like put it on and now. But
100% it had a Velcro strap. There's no doubt about that.
It's got some cheap thing that they got from a supply store, and it probably has no branding on it. And
lawyers are like, okay, go get the cheapest fingerless gloves you can find, and let's just shut these people up.
And it says, my bad. That's craziness. Huh. Yeah, we never played it.
Just one more tiny story about Mario Party. Like I was saying, the only thing in the end that matters are the stars. And the stakes are high, especially whenever you play like a 50-turn game, which takes about, it takes a few hours. Because turn you're playing a mini game. I was losing the entire game. My friend was winning the entire game. I think he was up by like 5 stars. He had 7 stars. I had 2. Damn. And on the very last turn, I land on something that swaps our stars. So for 3 hours, nothing mattered at all until that very last turn. I won. And he was so upset. Like I'm surprised he didn't cry. He's so evil. So mad.
That's so funny. Thinking about it, like, why has Nintendo not done a really good board game couch co-op WarioWare game?
That'd be amazing.
Imagine the bonus games versus each other with WarioWare.
Oh, WarioWare. Wow. Yeah. No kidding.
Like, just imagine it. Like, because, I mean, WarioWare, I think that there's been one with multiplayer in it, but like, imagine if they just did the board game thing for Mario Party, called Wario Party. Like, done.
Oh my gosh, dude. Like, Nintendo, come on.
We get the minigames, and the minigames are fun.
Mario Party, right? Holy hell.
Like, what are we doing here, Nintendo? You can feel free to have that one, Nintendo, who won't be listening to us.
Yeah, it's a freebie.
Like, come on. I want Wario Party. Like, I just want to play versus
I'd buy it.
Make it fun.
So
I'll say the first story I'll tell you about, definitely not one in your pile. At least I don't think it's one in your pile. I won't pick an obvious one. So let's talk about the NBA games.
Definitely not my pile.
And so this is the Kyle story. I got to do a Kyle story. Okay. And so back in the day, Kyle and I used to play the shit out of NBA Jam on the Sega Genesis. Him and I would play. We would be untouched if you beat to the point where the computer couldn't score on us. I ended up later getting NBA Jam Tournament Edition on Super Nintendo, and I would play it on the side. Never played it with Kyle, but I would play it on the side because, like, Kyle and I would get together with, like, family get-togethers and things, and we'd play. And he would bring his Sega Genesis, and we'd play NBA Jam. We got to his cabin because his parents had a cabin out on the lake, and we got to the lake cabin and we play NBA Jam and Toe Jam and Earl and Kid Chameleon, classic Genesis. Buddy. But fast forward to the N64 era, rentals, and we rent NBA Hang Time.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to go over to my buddy, his name was Cecil Pendleton, and we go over to his house. Family is very religious, and they would be doing religious stuff, and they'd bring over like their friends from church that had some kids. And this one dude's name was Robbie Binder. And he was such a shit talker about NBA Jam that and like, he was just talking so much smack because he was playing versus, like, they were playing versus each other or whatever. And Kyle and I are just waiting our turn. I feel like we're the champions. We're like the final boss or whatever. And this dude's talking so much trash, to the point where, like, and we hadn't even played yet, Kyle is, like, about to beat the crap out of this dude, like, going to ask for him, and I'm, like, holding Kyle back, and he's, like, a ravenous, like, beast, and Kyle's not a violent person. This dude talks so much smack. Then we get to play, and I want to say we chose Price Chicago, as always, or whatever. And we crushed them so bad that Robbie Binder was crying. Because, like, we merciless. Like, usually we just play, like, normal and we have fun and give them a chance and whatever. We mercilessly destroyed them to the point. It was in triple digits. It was triple digits to single digits for scoring. Like, it was bad. And this dude was like, and Kyle got banned from game night at the Pendleton. So I didn't want him back because he almost did a fight. He was mean. He made the other dudes cry. The guy didn't want to come over. Like, it was like so classic. And the thing was, is Kyle was just defending our honor as gamers, is all he was doing. Hey. And he, like, I just remember his head, like, moving around with his red hair, and he was so angry. It's so good. Like, it was just a classic story, though, for NBA Hangtime. And, like, that was our, like, game that week that I would rent from the grocery store that they had 64 rentals at. It was, like, Wilco Grocery Store or whatever in Cedar Lake, Indiana, had like, game rentals. And that was the game we rented that weekend. It's just the classic stuff. I figured you don't have that one in your pile because you've got a couple of the other ones I got stories for. But mine, people just tag onto yours. They're not as funny as that. That was so dumb. And, like, because when Kyle and I would play stuff, like, we would play until we mastered the shit out of it. Like, it was, like, play millions of times until we have the best time ever in Mario Kart or whatever. Like, it's... Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Kyle and his anger to destroying people. So good, though. And so funny. Four player hang time.
Of course, when talking about party games in that era, we got to talk about GoldenEye.
Oh, my God.
GoldenEye, it was funny, and a lot of people don't know this because it's not a rare game now. Like, it's if you want a copy of GoldenEye on N64, then you're definitely not going to have trouble finding it. But at release, it was impossible to find a copy.
It was always out, too. Ever anybody wanted to rent it, it was gone.
Yeah, because it was so popular that
we get one. To rent.
Yeah.
One copy. They didn't get multiple copies like they would later when they learned, but they'd have one copy. And I had like two or three rental stores in my tiny neighborhood, my tiny town.
Yeah, and it was such a surprise hit that they definitely underestimated the demand for it. So you just couldn't find it in stores. And like Jeff was saying, you couldn't even find it in rental stores most of the time.
Yeah.
So it was kind of funny. We had this friend, Morgan. Morgan came from he was kind of a stoner, and his parents were pretty hands off, but he was a rich kid.
Okay.
So his parents really didn't care what he spent money on or whatever. So Morgan rented GoldenEye from our local game store. It was family run. We didn't have a Blockbuster or Family Video or anything like that, like, ever growing up. We had Figuritos Video and Movies.
Figuritos. That's Figuritos. Awesome.
It was that was the name of the owner.
That's cool.
And they got GoldenEye from Figuritos, and he lost it, Jeff. He lost the copy.
God.
So essentially he bought the copy, paid I think it was like double the cost or something like that. So it was like $130 or $140 that he had to pay for losing the copy of GoldenEye.
You think about it from a GoldenEye perspective, though, if you're running it, you spent all the time to do all of the missions within the time limits and within the how you had to do them to unlock the special stuff. And then you take the damn rental game back, and then it gets deleted.
Oh, that's just mean.
Because they have the little, like, cards that the memory card, whatever. Yeah. But I thought GoldenEye was saved on the cartridge.
It was on the cartridge.
Yes, it didn't save on the controller or the controller. No. we get corrupted. So, I mean, that was the thing, though, is that we would do all of that so we could party on the weekends and have the game night. So, like, you'd rent it a couple days early so you could unlock Golden Gun, unlock all the craziness. And that's how
big we came.
Big head
mode.
Big head. And I'll tell you, the favorite way to play that we always did was proximity mines only.
And then proximity mines license to kill, so it like it killed you in one hit.
Yep. And we would run around, we would all plant stuff, and then we would like try to catch the other people slipping
on all the spawn points, and like you instantly die, and then you spawn and you instantly die. Like spawn and instantly die. It's funny.
And then I remember back in the day too, action replay was a thing. So you'd have the action replay thing. And there was a code that would unlock some of the older James Bonds.
Yeah.
And so you could play as those that you couldn't do with any code or any achievement or any of that. Like, because I think the Golden Gun things, they would end up being like codes that you could use to do the things after you unlock them. But you would use these action replay to unlock bits inside the game that were locked away, that were locked by developers. And you'd be like, oh, now I can play as Timothy Dalton.
Yeah, Roger Moore.
those were classics, and I think even some of them broke the damn game. But and then you know, cheating bastards used Odd Job.
Yeah, cheating so motherfuckers.
Like run under because when you were shooting, it wasn't necessarily like we were used to now with twin stick shooters. You would use the actual analog stick on the left, and then the controller C buttons. And so, like, there was no, like, easy aiming. So when you would normally aim, that's how you're shooting immediately when you come around a corner because it's harder to pitch. And so Odd Job would go right over his head.
Oh, Odd Job was banned by every single household in America.
Mm-hmm.
And whoever played Odd Job was just a punk-ass bitch.
The same played as Eddie Gordo in Tekken Tag.
Or Sumo Joe in WCW versus NWO Revenge. Calling you out, Jason Harville.
Interesting. So you thought Sumo Joe. I always remember in WCW versus NWO World Tour, you had the Muhammad Ali character, the boxer.
Joe Boxer, yeah.
Joe would knock people out, even though it was TKO.
Instantly.
Cheating bastards.
Yeah, cheaters.
Yeah, but yeah, GoldenEye was a staple. I mean, we would rent it all the time, play the hell out of it.
And, you see people get upset, like, playing online and throwing their headsets and controllers. Just imagine, like, you know, getting the brakes beat off you by someone, like, you know, 10, 15 kills in a row and you can't touch them. Like, and that shit eating grin bastard is like sitting right next to you on the couch. There'd be some upset moments to say the least.
Awesome. That was the classic. And the only thing that got closer to it before we went to straight online gaming was LAN parties when you'd have like four Xboxes. And so like, I remember that was another Kyle one. We were playing Halo with four Halo. Xboxes in four different rooms. And you could still, like, in the one room where we have our team, you could still hear the other person go, motherfuckers, you kill him on the other lane.
Yeah, and, dude.
Like, that was the last of the golden era of couch co-op. Where
so fun, too, man. Like, what a cool thing. It's not emulated. It's not replicated on the online experience. There's nothing like it.
No.
Especially amongst friends.
Yeah, and you go back to GoldenEye, and then you had the bastard who would look at your screen as you're trying to
hide. Screen watching. Oh, man, I didn't even think about that. Quit looking at my screen.
I knew people that, like, would put cardboard up, so that way Chris up with their own little visor, like, to put up cardboard.
I've heard of the game. It was on PS4 called Screen Cheat. Screen Cheat actually makes everybody else invisible on your screen, so you have to look at everyone else's screen to know where they are in relation to your character. Yeah, it's funny.
So messed up. But yeah, like, it's just classics, cheating bastards. That's especially you're doing proximity mines and everybody's hiding them, and I'm like you casually just look over, and I mean, you just like glance up.
Yeah, no, you couldn't help it. You couldn't help it. And you know, those days there's no such thing as a big screen either. I mean, well, a big screen TV to us was either one of those like projectors with really terrible like fading, or or like a 27-inch CRT. The struggle was real, kids.
Going back to the Pendletons being churchgoers, they were part of this big old Christian faith or whatever. And so we would go to this big old auditorium, and they had a giant ass screen, and we played GoldenEye at a church, killing each
other. Nice.
It's so messed up. But yeah, they would do like a little. Because like I'm not much of a churchgoer person, but like they were huge into it. But we'd go there to play video games on the giant screen. I just remember doing the GoldenEye tournament. Over there, like
Mario
playing
Kart
over there.
Fun on it was always fun on a big screen.
Mario yeah, Kart we could was. Transition to Mario Kart. That is a classic. Yeah, Mario Kart was. I mean, to this day, that was probably my most fun I've had with any Mario Kart besides for the brand new one on Switch. It's been Mario 64.
Yeah,
I got the classic story where you know that one did save on the memory cards, and that game in Wave Race. I had all my scores on there. Later on, when I redeployed in the Army, I was looking at Twin Galaxies, and I looked at my old scores, and I had, like, half of the damn world records at that time. I had half the world records for Mario Kart 64 on a lot of those tracks, because we would just play them over and over and over again, like, just having fun and racing and doing time trials and finding shortcuts that people didn't know about until the internet came around, and I knew about them. I knew how to jump the track at a certain
Mario
spot.
Stadium. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And
how we all knew about that? Freaking.
Yeah. Well, it was just for messing around. You know, back in those days, games were prohibitively expensive. So if you got a game like Mario Kart, that's all you played for months, man.
And there's nothing more fun than doing something that you felt the developer didn't intend you to do.
I
get to jump over this thing. It feels like your sequence breaking the game. That's why there's channels to sequence breaking now. It's just it's a fun thing.
Well, and even in the days of like that Nintendo Power little spread called Classified Information, that was my favorite. That was my favorite little section in Nintendo Power because it showed you all the stuff that you shouldn't be able to do or like codes or whatever. And like, oh, I got to try that. Yeah. So it was super cool.
And a lot of those codes originated from developers giving reviewers a code so they could get through the game for the review before the game came out, or from game testers so they could get to another level so that way they could beta test the next level. And they would not remove them, and then when they realized the gamers really loved it, it started to become a staple. The Konami code was a staple because Konami used the same code every time, which is a classic. And then I always remembered, I think it was Turtles 3, they did the Konami code but swapped A and B.
Yeah, they did.
Those jerks.
EABA.
And I was, I was like up, up, down, down, left, right, left, right. A B start to go to the
A B. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, as A, B start to go there. It's like, you jerks. But it was funny because, like, you know, it was
Konami.
Yeah, it was a Konami game, even though it was Ultra. Or I think that one was Konami later. But, yeah, Mario Kart, though, was a staple classic racing game. Fun.
Well, and the frustration with Mario Kart, there's a difference in skill sets. So that's there's some frustration there. And then there's the frustration of like picking on one person. So like, you know, you get the three red shells and then you'll just camp right behind someone and then just fire all three and then go on your merry way. Like you, there's some masterclass trolling that you can do in Mario Kart 64. But,
good.
Yeah. The frustrating thing for anyone who is really good at that game is the built-in rubber banding that Mario Kart has. So if you're in first place, you're getting bananas for days, man. Well, oh yeah, thanks guys, another banana.
I mean, you know, your left shoulder, it's why Mario Kart Wii was broken. Damn blue shell.
Yeah.
like the damn blue shell broke that game and made it not fun, getting all those damn shells shot at you and the bananas because of the rubber banding. The pain in Mario Kart 64.
Well, and rubber banding has been a thing ever since all the way to the beginning of Mario Kart's roots. I mean, it gives people in last place a chance to come back, but I mean, it also takes some of the skill out of it. Where like, you know, you're in first place, but you're getting penalized by like, you know, getting lightning bolted and blue shelled to death, like constantly.
Luckily, they somewhat fixed that with Mario Kart 8. The blue shells on is terrible.
No. And you have protection from it with that horn. So, yeah.
So
that was definitely something that was missing.
Yeah. So we talked about WCW versus NWO, you know, Revenge, World Tour. However, there's a game that Kyle loved that I played, wanted to love, but I'd never liked it as much. And that was the WWF Warzone and Attitude games.
Really? Okay.
So those games, you know, like, so the WCW Revenge and World Tour were more methodical, had lots of moves, they're polygonal, they're crazy. Mm-hmm. Whereas the Warzone and Attitude were side by sides. And it was more Mortal Kombat. So I had, you know, the WWF Warzone guide and like Stone Cold, you'd have to do like left, down, left, A, A, B, B, and then you could do a move.
No kidding.
Damn combo. So to do things, you had to memorize all those. And Kyle had a photographic memory. So he would pick his character and crush people because he would be like so good at memorizing all the different moves. And I would sit there with my damn book and I'd have to like look down and remember them. And it was insane. So that was four player. It was fun as hell, but I'd be more button mashing versus doing all the different, because it was like to do a normal move, you would have to do a combo every single time. Everyone required a Mortal Kombat style combo and they got prohibitively longer, and Attitude made it even worse. The one thing that game did have though, that was awesome, was a very, at the time, robust create a character mode where you could create like pretty much anything you could think about within reason back in the day. Now it kind of sucks compared to what we have now, but it was awesome back in the day to have your own created characters.
It was a relatively new thing.
Yeah. Cause Revenge and World Tour, you could like edit some stuff in the characters. I think eventually like the names and stuff, but like that one was the first like that I remember having a robust character creator. So that made it cool. But then on the side, I would find myself giving the same moves to my creative characters because I couldn't memorize that many different move sets. So those weren't as fun with the parties, the potties.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if I played much Warzone back in the day, but that's what I played instead of Mario Party.
The last one that I picked off the shelf was Power Stone, Arena Fighter. Just like our premium edition, Mighty Fight Federation. It's an arena fighter, a 3D arena fighter that, you know, you can pick up and play. And, like, you've got all sorts of these moments where, like, you can pick on one person or just get railed by three other people in the same arena. And it makes for funny moments, especially with all the power-ups that you can get in Power Stone. That's like, you know, you're picking up those gems and you're constantly it's a balance of defense, like staying away from attacks, but it's also a balance of offense where you're trying to get those stones away from people. So it's funny. It makes for some funny moments.
I remember, I think it was Power Stone 2. One of the characters is basically Goku from Dragon Ball Z. Like powers up
Saiyan mode. I didn't play that one too much.
Yeah, because I think I got both around the same time when I finally got my Dreamcast. But it was after the era of when we were doing these game nights, though. So I never got any 30 nights off of my Dreamcast. But I definitely played it single player and enjoyed the hell out of it.
Yeah.
Freaking awesome. So fast forward many years for the Wii. And I have a party story for the Wii. And so early on, first year in the Army, before we deployed, I was, you know, at a cavalry unit, a Second Striker Cavalry Division. And in the barracks, we're in Germany. We used to do like beer pong tournaments, and we would have wrestling belts where we'd have champions and all this stuff. Nice. Put our name tapes on the Velcro and have champions. But during that time, I was able to get a Nintendo Wii. And Nintendo Wii at the time was sold out everywhere.
Everywhere.
Did not get a copy. My sister in Indiana went to the Toys R Us, the same Toys R Us. I bought my N64 and got like one of the last copies when the N64 was the same, where it was sold out everywhere during launch. She went there and got me a Wii and mailed it to me in Germany. What ended up happening was drunk Wii bowling. So we would get everybody that was staying back on the barracks, usually before we go out on the town, because we go out and do all the Volksfest in Germany and the festivals. Before we go out, and basically, if you didn't get a strike or a spare, you'd have to take a drink. and we got really good, but we also got very drunk. We started with shots, and you could imagine people were not able to go out.
Sloppy.
But like, it was bad. But doing drunk Wii bowling was awesome. Like, we used to play all the time. We actually transitioned that later once I redeployed and moved to Florida when I was working with Southern Command. Met my wife. She came out. We were doing the Wii Sports Resort version of Wii bowling at that point, because the Wii was still going at that point, even years later. And we were playing the resort version with friends, and we didn't go as hard with the drinking, but it still was like, get a strike or a spare, take a drink as a team, having fun with it. Never rekindled that with Switch Sports with bowling on it, but drunk Wii bowling. Did you do any crazy Wii bowling or any of that stories, Tristan?
Yeah, let me back up to a similar story about getting my Wii. Just like you, I had it was impossible to find. Like, if you didn't do your due diligence and research, like, you'd have to call around to Target or Walmart or Shopko or whatever store you've got and find out, like, hey, when are the shipments coming in? How many are they getting on the truck? So like this one morning I went to Shopko. They knew that the UPS truck was going to be showing up around, X and X time. So I showed up like 3 hours early. I was the third person in line, and they got two on the truck.
Sure.
So I didn't get a Wii then, but then shortly after that, I deployed to the Middle East. It was just like, I was working night shift, and this particular day, I'm just going to go to the base exchange on base. So I went to the base exchange, and I'm always like in the video game aisle or whatever, and they're stocking the shelves. They're pushing around the shopping cart, and I look down in the shopping cart, and there's a couple Wiis in there. I'm like, are you freaking kidding me? It was December 24th, too. It was the day before Christmas. So wow. I'm like, can I get one of those? They're like, yeah, go ahead. So I take it out of the cart and I like buy it, and I'm so excited.
You run off.
Yeah. I took it to work, and that entire deployment, our entire shift was like competing in Wii bowling, and golf was a huge one for us.
Oh, yeah. Golf was awesome.
Yeah.
That's the thing that's crazy is like, so now you can't do drunk Wii bowling because there's barely, if anybody's making hooch, it's terrible. But like, it was really drinking deployment because we got to keep a clear head.
Well, yeah, I mean, there was drinking on base, but obviously not at work. Like we were, playing Wii bowling at. But it was like while we were deployed, it was three drinks a day. We were
not allowed to drink at all.
No.
No, Army was not allowed to drink. We were doing missions all the time, and I mean, we were in a danger area too. So
sure, we were considered in a hostile territory, but we were in the place where you guys would take R&R.
I was near the Iraq-Iran border where there were bombs going off all the time and shooting projectiles at us. So we weren't drinking.
No, yeah, and
we're on high alert. I got it.
And when you guys went on R&R, rest and relaxation, you would go to All You Need Air Base Qatar. That's where I did my deployments, except for a couple of them. I did. And
ironically, we probably would have hung out because I would have been able to, but my unit did not let me go on R&R because I was mission essential. Wow. So I didn't get to go on R&R for 15 months straight. And
oh, that's fun. But I guarantee that we were over in the Middle East at the same time, at the very least. I was part of a reconnaissance squadron that was supporting the guys on the ground. So,
awesome. And the thing that's interesting is it does go to a video game story because through the eyes of a gamer, which is what I'm getting my write up my autobiography out there eventually. I was deployed and I had brought my Wii, but one of my buddies was leaving, or buddy from a different, actually, that's who I met out there. We're going back to NBA Hangtime. Cecil Pendleton was out there deployed with the reserve unit, and I had lunch with him. Like, he is a damn captain. He's an officer in the reserves or something. And I'm like, what the hell? And he was leaving the area. And that's where it's crazy. It goes right back to party games. And he was getting rid of his Xbox 360.
Yeah.
I bought his Xbox 360 and got Halo 3. I was playing Halo 3 from Cecil Pendleton's, like, Xbox. From the dude that I used to play NBA Hangtime with back in the day in high school. That was religious and stuff. And, like, it was craziness. And that's the last time I actually hung out with him, too. I haven't seen him since. He's still in Indiana, I want to say. I don't know if he's still in the reserves or not. But either way, though, it was crazy seeing him in person. But I hadn't seen him since high school. I had went to college and then joined the Army. It was like 5-6 years later, and I see him in Iraq in the war zone. And we were still at the green zone at that point because we were there for a few months, and then we went to the danger area. So I spent like maybe 2 months in the green and then another 13 in the crazy area. I actually took my – because you get to go on – you know, your leave that you get to take one time during the deployment. And I did mine.
Like
the 1 or 2 months in, I went home to Indiana during Christmas. So I got to go right at the beginning. And then by the next Christmas, because it was like 2 months in, went for Christmas. And then right after Christmas is when we redeployed again the next year. So I that first Christmas, though, I got to see my family. And it was funny. We were doing family game night around the we were playing like probably – I don't know, Trivial Pursuit or Monopoly or something. And my dad was like yelling at us for being too loud sitting in the other room. All right, well, I'm going back to Iraq tomorrow. Thanks, Dad. I had no concept of like, yeah, your son's going to war, back to war. It was craziness. But yeah, so I got my 360 from Pendleton. That's freaking wild, dude. Like,
it's funny. I actually I got whatchamacallit, my regular Xbox while I was deployed one time. I actually won it playing bingo. the local MWR morale, welfare, and relaxation, maybe?
Recreation,
yeah. So they sponsored bingo every like week, and I bought it, or I won an Xbox playing bingo.
It's awesome.
Bingo. Yeah, so we would play I think it was like Tiger Woods 04 or something like that. Like,
it's classic, it's always golf. Well, and the thing is that like 360 then, ironically, big red ring of death, right, with the overheat and everything. And my version that I got literally in the desert lasted almost to the end of the life cycle, never got ring to the very end. It didn't red ring
to the very end. Oh, it didn't red ring. Oh, nice.
No, and it was filled with sand at one point, like craziness. Like, so it was really weird. But go to game parties. What are your stories about Guitar Hero and Rock Band?
Because yeah, that was a resurgence right there.
Exactly. And at the same time that we were doing the Wii on the out, we were playing Rock Band and Guitar Hero. Because I was playing Guitar Hero 3 when I was deployed. You know, redeployment. Met my wife. We were having Rock Band parties, and we were all playing Rock Band, playing all the games. Crazy story, though, is that there's a Rock Band, I don't know if it was part 3, that came out, and it had a pro guitar controller. And I don't know if you remember the pro, but it had like two versions. So you had the normal one with all the red buttons, red, green, yellow, the buttons, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then you had a pro controller that had like a million buttons. With like a ton of freaking buttons that you would play on every fret, like, so you press all the little buttons. And then you had the one that I pre-ordered that was literally a guitar that was electronic that you play the guitar with Rock Band 3.
That would be insane.
And by the time it came out, though, Tristan, it was like we had already played every single game when we were burnt out and done with the whole genre. That was the genre was peaking. But I got my pro guitar in. Those things ended up being worth like $1,000 later because nobody got them in. I got one in. They showed up broken. They showed up everything. And I got mine. It was perfect. I let my wife sell it on eBay or something, and because I never played it because we were done with Rock Band at that point.
Yeah.
And I regretted not getting the middle tier Pro controller, but it had like 100 fucking buttons. There's no way I could have played
that. I do remember that too. There's no way.
Because later, after Rock Band, they had created another game where you literally just play your guitar and you plug it into the computer. Yeah. That game was cool as hell.
Oh, what was that called? I don't remember.
It was cool as hell, and I played it. That's what I played. But I got rid of my Rock Band Pro controller because I just never played it. But it was like there was no way I could have realistically played that to the beat. Like, yeah, it would have been easier for me to just play real guitar. And it was easier for me to play real guitar versus that shit. Like, did you have any stories with Guitar Hero or Rock Band back in the day?
Nothing crazy, but I was actually the person in our group that introduced everyone to Guitar Hero. Okay. I heard about the genre. I've always been a rhythm game fan. And, you know, there were very few instances of that genre, like especially like Guitar Hero. It was Guitar Freaks over in Japan. But I played it over in Japan, and I liked the game. So whenever I heard the Guitar Hero was coming out and it was similar, I was all over it. Like, I remember, like, there was one night my wife and I lived in an apartment at the time, and like everyone was going out to a bar. And I had just heard about it and called up GameStop, and they had like one final copy of it left. So I'm like, Nat, you go to the bar. I'm going to go get this. I'm going to play it. Like, it sounds like super fun. So I was antisocial and sat there and played Guitar Hero all night, like, by myself. And whenever Nat came home, I'm like, holy crap, you have to try this. So much fun. And like weekends and weekends after that, like everyone was coming over to our apartment to play Guitar Hero.
Yeah. Then it became a social game, right?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, hugely. Oh, it was huge.
Well, and it's crazy is like the Guitar Hero arcade is still around at some of the barcades and stuff. And to this day, I'll play Paint It Black on there. That's what I play on it every time. So point where it's now nostalgic for my daughter, London, who's 11, because she's heard it since she was a little baby. Every time we go there, we play Paint It Black. That song is nostalgic for her because I play Guitar Hero so much on that.
Yeah, dude, there are some songs that like come on the radio and you're like, oh, Guitar Hero, oh, Rock Band.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it'll never go away.
They've tried to resurge it. It's not really.
It's because it was too much too fast. They bled every drop of blood out of the turnip, and they collapsed that niche. Didn't last.
Exactly. And I mean, it's the same thing with the dance party games and all that stuff. Is like it ends up being licensing, and then you lose songs. And,
yeah.
But our 360 that we have, it still has every game on it. I think we have it on our PlayStation or something too. But like, we have it. We have all the songs that we bought over the years. We still can play Rock Band. We actually, what was it, like a year or two ago in Georgia, we had a Rock Band night, and we brought out all the crap, and one of us was sitting on the couch playing the drums, and I'm the only one who could play it, apparently. But
play the drums for crap.
And we had fun with it. We had fun as hell playing Rock Band. We wanted to do it all the time. We ended up only doing it one time, but it was really fun. It was a fun, and I actually dug out all the stuff, and it was sitting in my garage in Georgia like the whole time I was there, and we only played it once, and it was like taking up space, and I'm like, cool, but all that plastic stuff just took up so much space.
Oh yeah, dude, the peripherals were huge.
And the only other classic story I have is you go from Florida to when I moved to Indiana, and that's around when London was born. We're still playing Wii stuff. Because Wii is sick. And there's this series called Game Party. I don't know if you remember it.
Game I do. Party.
And there's Game Party 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah.
And Game Party 3 is the one that we would have. And it was my wife Andrea's favorite one. We played Jarts and all the classic stuff. And I remember, like, she went versus Kyle and I together in Jarts. And she, like, crushed us because we told the story about Robbie Binder and us being undefeated and all this stuff, like all these different stories. there's a picture of us. It's going to be in the complete NES book. We're kind of like looking down. That's when we got beat in Game Party 3 by Andrea and got schooled. She destroyed us in it.
Nice.
And it was like we used to play those games. And, you know, fast forward to now where we do family game night on Saturdays. We ended up just doing a movie yesterday. We finally watched Guardians 3.
Hey, I just watched that on Friday night for the first time.
And it was, you could tell there's, you know, superhero fatigue, but it was still fun. But the last ones that we played, so we played the Illusion Island game, the Mickey's game, with three players. Really, really fun. And it's a Metroidvania, very easy Metroidvania with no attacks. That was fun. Yeah. But the game that we're playing a lot is Pinball Arcade. And we have been doing the Pinball Arcade for years. I want to say for the last 5 years. And we bought like tables in, they had like series or, you know, seasons of tables. Yeah. And we buy them all. And our goal was is that before we bought the next season, we would want to unlock, because they do achievements. They do table goals and then wizard goals. Like, we got to beat all the table goals before we will move on to the next table. That went out the damn window as we got behind. But we fired it up for game night a couple weeks ago, like in between recordings, and we unlocked a couple of table goals as we were playing through the Pinball Arcade. But because of licensing, it became less interesting because now some of the tables are not available to purchase, even though if you bought them, you could still play them. And now you have to buy it per manufacturer instead of season. So when they don't have a good tracking mechanism of what you've bought, because you can go to My Tables and see the tables that you played. But then when you go to like the tables that are available, it doesn't tell you which ones you own. So you kind of memorize which tables you own. And then each collector has tables you already bought with the series. So like, cause we bought a bunch of series, like we can't just go and buy anything at a discount. Oops, the series I would mention for people listening and watching is the Zen series. So there's like Pinball FX.
Yeah, Zen Pinball is good.
So good. And then we were playing that yesterday before game night, and actually probably before game night. And then I realized, because remember I have a little pinball machine that was made on by a gamer, and I could put my Switch in it, and it has buttons.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize it, but I realized yesterday the new Switch OLED is just big enough to where it doesn't fit in 3D printed.
Oh no!
Put it in there, and then I realized it also doesn't recognize the controllers the same as the original Switch, so I can't even use it with my Switch. Because I was going to play Pinball FX 3, which is the Nintendo Switch one, and I have because my daughter's recently also become, besides for Five Nights at Freddy's, with Fallout, and she wanted to play, and I have a Fallout pinball table on there, so I wanted her to play it. And yeah, Nuka Cola is what she wanted to see. It's awesome.
Yeah, I just picked that up a couple days ago.
Awesome. Yeah, so like we're still gaming to this day as a family and trying to keep it alive, and London doesn't want to game with us because she wants to go play Roblox or whatever with her third shill account because she got banned again.
No.
Yeah, she like is talking smack to others for bullying and in turn is bullying herself and then gets banned. That's what she does. I'm like, blame. You can't make fun of them online. Stop it. Damn. So she's on her third account. We told her if she got banned again, we would not give her any more money for Roblox. So she gets no more money for Roblox.
Sure.
But like, that's why she wanted to go back and play Illusion Island some more. And I'm like, well, yeah, we can probably play that. But
so have you ever played Pinball FX in VR before?
I have never played anything in VR.
Oh, wow. Dude, it's mind blowing, man. Like you stand up and it feels like you're standing at the table.
That's all, because the thing was, is the reason why I haven't done VR, obviously Virtual Boy trauma, but back in the day, like, because I have astigmatism, I would have like 20, 30, and then 20/10 in one eye, so my eyes were all jacked up. Now I'm 20/70 and 20/30 in this eye, so I'm blind as shit with this right eye. I can't see nothing.
Left eye, dude. So, same.
Yeah, but like, I guess now with VR, you can wear it with glasses and everything, so it's cool. All I'm waiting for is my daughter to get all A on a roll. As soon as she does that, we're buying an Oculus, and then I will be It's
amazing, just, man. Like, if nothing else, get pinball effects on the Oculus. Oh, it's incredible.
I will definitely, as soon as we're getting one, I'm going to hit you up and probably hit up the community and see, all right, what games do I need to get? I know that's one.
Mm-hmm.
Because the thing is most of VR is a lot of mini games and stuff. So I'm like,
yeah, it'll be gimmicks fun. And whatever. But to be able to actually like stand there and then like, like I said, it feels like you're actually standing in front of a pinball machine because of the depth for depth perception and everything. It's really cool.
Oh, and maybe that'll make it so I don't have to buy a Foo Fighters pinball table later for my wife. Every week, she loves Foo
There's
Fighters.
There's nothing like a real pinball machine. There's nothing like it.
Well, because my thought is I want to get one of those ones that John Lester has, the little mini scale down ones that have all the virtual on it and you can play on it.
I want a full size one of those.
I do, but for space considerations, I want to get the mini one like he has. And I know I was talking with the developer of that, and he was going to make me one. And I since had moved, so I need to follow up with that dude, actually. So I'm glad we talked about that because I got to hit him up because I would like to buy one. But I do want a full one of those, too, because then you can just swap out all the stuff and you have infinite pinballs. And I like I want it big. I want it big so I could play it. Like,
yeah,
I'm old. You can't see. So.
Same.
Dude, that would be amazing. But yeah, Andrew wants a full, so I will probably get one of those and a Foo Fighters, and I'll have two pinball machines.
Yeah.
She's getting her Foo Fighters one. She's already told me, so I have no choice in the matter.
All right.
Because if I got
my wife to let me get one.
Hell yeah, and we can play online together because there's online connectivity. I remember Gary Stern at Midwest Gaming Classic showing off the first year that he announced that, and I was literally putting in my code with Gary there, the guy who creates the freaking pinballs, and he's like showing me how it online tracks my score, and then I went back later and it tracked my damn score online. I'm like, dude, this is the next level. This is exactly what you needed to create to keep pinball moving into the new generation, because I could literally go to any barcade that has your pinballs and compete on worldwide scoreboards,
not local
on the bar, which is fun as shit, by the way.
Sure.
And by the way, like, once I'm back on the mainland and retired, like, we're gonna have to start some kind of competition thing, because back in the day, the Video Game Masters Club, I used to get together with my buddies in Indiana when I was in recruiting and my daughter was very young, and we would start, we had an online scoreboard, we had wall scoreboards, and we would play games every week, and we were playing the Homebrew World Championships. We were playing a bunch of stuff that we were playing versus each other. Let's Bowl was the one we used to play on the Neo Geo. The bowling game on the Neo Geo was awesome.
That's my favorite bowling game, the Neo Geo one. Yes.
We always compete versus in Neo Geo.
Last time I had people over, I had them compete on that bowling game.
Dude, it's probably my favorite bowling game of all time.
Oh, it's so good.
The Capcom one in the arcades with the trackball, but Let's Bowl, I don't even know the name of it. I call it Let's Bowl. That one's better.
It's League Bowling.
Bowling, yep, that is it.
Yep. But at the Let's Play Gaming Expo, the last one they ever had, I got the high score in League Bowling. I got I think like a 283 or something like that. Like,
damn.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hear my dogs. Means my wife might be back from going adventuring. She went to go shopping or something. So I think does that put a bow on things? Do you have any other stories?
No, that puts a good bow on things. You know, we didn't talk about Smash Brothers, but that's an easy kill. But
I mean, I got stories on Smash where I was like wearing a Walter Day ref shirt that was too small on me, where it was like really tight, and we ran tournaments for Smash and for retro games. So we can do that for a different day, because I actually ran.
Yeah, there's too much to talk about with Smash.
Ran game tournaments with custom NES cartridges, and one guy ended up winning almost every one of them.
Dang, like, that's
outstanding
cool
stuff. Yeah, it was fun shit. Video Game Masters Challenge. It's the nice classic. So one thing that you and I, so as we transition to the next topic we had talked about, was going over, because I got my Steam Deck over here.
Mm-hmm.
And going over, there's a thing in here that we had talked about on an episode that's called the Roulette. And it allows me to take any game I have installed on here and put it into a roulette randomizer. And so essentially what I was said would be cool, because we like to do an episode focused on a game, like we did Gal Guardians today, is we'll do a randomizer, and then we will both play that game for the next episode. And how far we get, whether we play it or not, that'll all be part of the story. It'd be awesome. And we're in no hurry, like, to record real fast, so we have to, like, rush through a game. Like, we will take our time. But it'll be more bite-sized appetizer episode for the games. And there were a couple games that I had played in this randomizer mode that I wanted to talk about that were I didn't talk about the earlier one. So one of the games I played, I don't know if you've heard of these, probably not because they're super indie. This one is called the Bot Vice.
Nope.
So it looks like a 16-bit anime style, but it plays like Contra. It's a Contra-style action game. Hmm. Has voice acting, robots, and as we talk about these, you can feel free to look them up so you can get a little picture.
Yeah, I was just doing that.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. The entire soundtrack is inspired by Mega Man. And the interesting part is that unlike a Commando, or maybe like Commando, because I'm not really familiar with the whole Commando series, there's like bullet hell, crazy bullets all over the place as enemies are popping out and they're jumping out of stuff and jumping out of tanks and doing all this stuff. And so the focus of the game is you are dodging while holding down homing attacks. So you're holding down the
attacks. I love that.
And you do a button.
That's a cool looking game.
You'll like hold down one of the triggers and it'll like home in on the enemies, but then you got to watch out for the other bullets that are coming at you. The only challenge is being able to decipher which bullets are yours and the enemies.
Mm-hmm.
At times the colors are fine, but it's like, it gets busy. It gets real busy. And yeah. And so it's like getting down, it's just like crazy arcade action, but it does it bite sized levels by levels. You can go back and try to best your scores, which is awesome.
That's really cool.
Really fun, bite-sized game. It was awesome. And it was not in the... It was not a budget game from what I'm tracking. It was a normal-sized game. It was cool. Mm-hmm. It would be, and some of this stuff is stuff that we would sign for premium as well. So sure. That's kind of what we'll stay in. And then I will ask you, before we hit the random button, do we do random budget games or do we do random normal games? And I consider a budget game on Steam anything $9 or... And $9 or cheaper, and then everything $10 or above is regular. And these are also games that I'm looking to include in my Steam Indie Hidden Gems book.
Yeah,
it's like it's Steam Deck Hidden Gems, whatever. So it's a follow up to my Hidden Gaming Gems book. I'm gonna do an indie, hidden indie games. And essentially, this will help do that. The second game that I played, it was called Witch Eye. One word, Witch Eye. And this one was a budget title. You're constantly moving around a witch's eyeball in the level. And it moves around. And you can flick the right stick. And you can move any direction that you flick the stick in. And then you can press the L button and it'll stop it in thing. So you can like – and you go toward – and there'll be enemies that are moving. And if they have like a little spiky looking thing, it'll hurt you. You just hit it from the back. And then as you bounce in enemies – projectiles will come out too. You can avoid projectiles. Okay. The cool thing about it too is that you also have to stop because the enemies will drop like different rupees or diamonds, and you got to collect the diamond real fast too.
I like that.
And again, level by level, bite-sized levels to get to the end. You can go back and try to get all of the different diamonds. The diamonds eventually are hidden, so you can't find them initially just by moving through. Mm-hmm. And I got through to the first boss battle, and there's literally a boss battle, and it's freaking cool. It's really fun, too. So this is one of those genre melders that I like. I don't know if you ever played back in the day the Metroidvania that is Yoku's Island Express.
No.
And that is a physical Nintendo Switch game. We did an episode of the Switch Mania Playcast on it. It is a pinball Metroidvania. You play pinball.
What?
And it's Metroidvania. And you play
Yoku,
as this
little, what?
Yoku's Island Express. And it's, you're like a little dirt dung beetle. And you're pushing around a ball. And that ball is the pinball. And
oh, that's neat.
It's amazing. It was like game of the year almost. Indie game of the year.
Oh.
It was our game of the year for the Playcast as well.
Fun.
And so Witch Eye reminds me of a 2D mind meld of that, because it's almost like a combination of like a platformer and Arkanoid. But you can control the eye and move it for Witch Eye. Now I just blew your mind with Yoku, and you're probably gonna have to buy it now. But it's
I'm looking right now if it's available.
It's a badass game. It was released, I think, year one or two of the Switch.
Yeah, cool.
I covered that a while ago in the books too. But it's so cool, man. It is an awesome, awesome game. So as I bring open my Steam Deck here, we can then go in. So the question for you, Master Tristan, St. Tristan of Ibarra, are we going budget or non-budget?
Let's go non-budget this time.
Non-budget. And just so you know, in here I have them all itemized out. Let me see if I have a different one. Okay. So we have my main and we have my budget. The budget has 300 games in it. The main has 471 games in it. Mm-hmm. So we're doing the main one, and these aren't ones that I'm necessarily testing or doing anything else. These are just the budget games. I'm about to click it, and we are going to be playing a game. It is, you can hear the music that came up. It's called Xeno Hell, and it is a shoot 'em up. According to How Long to Beat, we should be able to beat the main story in under an hour. If you want to do the main and all the extras, it's 1.6 hours. Completion is 2 hours. Xeno Hell is what we'll be playing for the playcast. And then, see, that's the thing that's cool about this deck roulette thing is it has music now. And it's like literally a little bit of...
Oh, man, I love it. I'm in the mood to play some shoot-em-ups, too, so that's perfect.
Yeah, heck yeah, man. So that's going to be awesome. So Xeno Hell will be the next one that we play. There are a few games in the Xeno series that I have on my Steam Deck, so I've been meaning to play them. They're in my backlog. Let me see about my categories. It is in a testing backlog as well, which means this one is not available physically anywhere. So that's something cool that if we both dig it, maybe that's something we bring up to the premium team to sign as a game.
Sure.
And in my opinion, and Barry back on the Playcast era was never a fan of it, but like he was always afraid somebody would steal the game from us. Like if somebody signs it, cool.
Like, yeah, whatever.
Out there, man.
There's I just a feel like it's not meant to be at that point.
Exactly. But if it's so cool that somebody else wants to come in and sign and support the developer, the most we can do is play the game and enjoy it and give our feedback. So
I agree.
We got to shoot him up to play. Yes.
Cool.
Something that I used to do back in the day, which I've been thinking about doing again. So as we start to do these, I was doing and I don't have the set here, but I used to do perler beads on all the bullshit homework that we would do.
Cool.
And I'd make. So like Bionic Commando, I made a Bionic Commando one that I hung from my light switch. Did one on the Goonies, did one on Nightmare in the Dark on the Neo Geo. I did a little Nightmare guy. Make my own. So I might start doing that again. That'd be pretty fun for the pixelated games. I think Gal Guardians would be a little too complex to make a it'd be like this big. But
so cool. on the topic of bullet hell, I have two things to say. When I bought that RPG Time, there was something also available on PlayAsia that I bought called Dodonpachi Blissful Death Reincarnation. I know you know the Dodonpachi series.
I didn't know that they were releasing a new one because I think...
I didn't either.
Didn't Limited Run do a Dodonpachi and they released a little mini arcade with it? So I guess this is the newest one.
I guess so.
Please share link with me, Master Tristan.
Will do. So I bought that one. It was $47 on the PlayStation 4, and I think it was also available on the Switch.
So I'm going a little bit of melting the mind. So Master Tristan, like Master Higgins. Master Higgins is based off of Takaishi Menjin, and Takaishi Menjin is the master of the shoot 'em up, pressing the buttons really fast.
Nice.
I don't know if you ever saw that YouTube video where they shot it like an 80s montage of Master Takaishi Menji versus his rival. And they were doing this thing where he's doing this tapping on the top of a watermelon and he goes through the watermelon.
That's
like
insane.
It is. And so like literally he was the spokesperson in Japan for Hudson.
That's awesome.
Like he was like superstar.
Oh man, that makes so much sense because like, have you ever seen those Hudson shooting watches?
Yeah. He was the one who promoted the shooting watch.
That's cool. Yeah, dude, I literally just took that to my game store Wednesday. Thursday. And showed it to one of the employees and challenged him to button mash off.
I got mine from Josh and Sheena's. They had it at a convention once and I never found one. What I did find back in the day though was I have the towel from the promo event that Takeshi mentioned. Towel for that shooting watch that I have.
Yeah, I have that too.
Now I have the actual machine as well. But yeah, I'll have to find on YouTube. It's like hidden. You can't just search it easily, but I'll have to send it to you for the music's hilarious too. It's like motivational Rocky style music to lead up to the battle on shoot 'em ups on a Japanese game show that they did. And I first found out about him through Game Center CX, which we have an old VGBS episode on Center CX. And one of in the first season, which I call season zero because that's before he started, they did a Hudson one, and he got to meet Takeshi Menji, and he's like, Menji! Like, he keep on saying it. But like, that's why I was calling you Master Tristan, is because we go to the shoot 'em up now that we got awesome. Master Tristan of Ibarra.
So the second thing about the shoot 'em ups, like, and I had a proud uncle moment yesterday. My niece came over with my brother-in-law, sister-in-law, and she was playing on my Xbox 360 kiosk. I have a Japanese 360 in there because of all the shmups that were on there. And I've actually got a second monitor that's mounted right next to the monitor that comes with the kiosk so that I can play all my shmups in tape mode. And she wanted to play, so I sat her in front of Dodonpachi Saidaioju, which is the third in the series, and she beat the game. Like, she's actually good at them.
Really?
Yes.
Like, now, is she, like good, or is she, like, use infinite credits good?
Well, she was using infinite credit. Like, she beat the entire game, I think, 7 continues. But I mean, she was dodging a ton of stuff. It wasn't luck. She was doing like really well.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Dude, that's freaking cool.
Yeah. So I was super proud of her. And like, I had an extra copy of, Jamestown Plus on the Switch. So I sent her home with that. Yeah. Star Force. Oh, here it is. Oh my gosh. What?
that was part of the I gotta find it though, because he does 16 shots a second.
Gosh.
Like, he does 16 shots a second. That's how fast he is.
Yeah, he's doing it one-handed. I do it two-handed, like rocking back and forth. Exactly. And that's how many I can do with two hands, 16 a second.
Legend of the Game Master, the 16 shots.
That's incredible.
What I need to find though is the montage, because there is in there that video. That's a whole long video. This is from 16 years ago, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
But what I have to find is
Zero Sugar.
But I got to find the actual, because it's from a show called Game King, and I will just share that with you, Tristan, before I forget, because that's the one thing about these is this is the actual show, Game King, that it was on.
Okay.
It's like, yeah, there's like a whole intro that's like, this epic battle is coming, and that's in
it. I see it, yeah.
So there's actually a video that
Star Force.
That just does that montage. There's an actual intro that just does the intro montage, but the intro montage at the beginning.
Oh, that's legit, man. They're in like some crazy setups here.
Yeah, dude. They went all out with this shit. Like, it is like an epic battle for the ages.
They're like doing close ups on his like shooting, and oh my gosh, that's cool.
Dude, it's like, I love how much like shoot 'em ups, like how much the Japanese culture nerds out for it. And
I know.
Like, it feels like it was a time. And that's where, like, this is where I want to get your creative juices and my creative juices flowing. How do we recreate something like that?
Like Game King?
Like a a show or a go to conventions, or we can have people compete.
Well,
or,
yeah, because both of us are huge fans of Game Center CX. Like, both of us. I mean, you're a bigger fan than I am, and I thought I was a huge fan. Like, you know?
And I had always thought of ideas that I would do for Game Center. Like, I could sit there and, like, the thing is that you have to have somebody that's, like, not the best at video games playing these games.
And has a ton of patience, too.
And has a ton of patience. And so, like you or I, we'd probably be too good playing them, and it would be fun. Probably. But it's one of those things where maybe we do it when we go to conventions and we record people, and then we do Game Center. Oh,
man.
At conventions.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Because, like, if...
It'd be some, like, David Blaine-style thing where, like, someone's just, like, playing and being observed by everyone else.
Because if you think about it, it would be fun as if we did like a Game Center game tournament at the convention where we would have a few games that people would play throughout the weekend and we record them while they play.
Yeah. And
then we edit it later. Make it fun.
Yeah. I know Screw Attack Gaming Convention used to have the Iron Man of Gaming.
Yeah.
But, you know, Screw Attack is long since gone, and I'm sure the Iron Man of Gaming is too. So, you know, something's got to fill that void.
And my thought is like, if we do it like that, where we're actually physically going to the conventions, we can be there. We can have fun with it. We can do some interviews. But then we can also later on do editing, because it'd only be once in a blue moon that we have them. So we make it like a real episode. Could be video game bullshit, whatever.
There could be a like super hype like leading up to it, too.
And then you can also edit in Game Center. So when we're in the area, we could record video game stores.
Yeah, B-roll. Game
Center, man. Like, that's what I'm like, dude. I think we could do that. Like, you and I could go around the conventions when we go. That's something to think about. It'd be fun as shit. Interview boomers from the area and talk to them and be like, hey, this is your thing. Yeah. And we have the tournament going and people can play it, too. That way it's not like one dude. It's like maybe you and I as the video game bullshit house could just go around and talk to people and do all that stuff and have fun.
Exactly.
I don't know. It's been a thing where, because like what I've noticed is that I've never found anything on YouTube outside of just podcasting that I've been able to capture in an episodic based thing. But I feel like that would be cool as shit. And then I know a guy who owns a video game channel for TV that he would market that.
Oh, that'd be dope.
And he just have little. We only do a few at a time. Make it really cool. Make it really fun.
Well, yeah, and you know, it'd be easier once you're here back in the States too, which is a ways off. But
that's why we just plan until then. We all we got is time, man.
That's right. And hopefully
conventions are still going.
Oh, I know. Yeah. Well, yeah. You hear another COVID wave is coming. Oh boy.
My brother has it now.
Oh man, I'm sorry to hear that.
And his daughter, and because we did a Zoom call for my aunt's 70th birthday, and we were all on there. My brother's like, I got COVID. The COVID wave is not as bad as it used to be, so I think we're fine.
Sure, yeah, with vaccines and medication and people actually knowing how to deal with it now, like,
yeah,
I get it, but it still sucks. It doesn't make it any less miserable.
It does not. So I feel like we've been recording for a long time. I think it's time to cut this episode. Episode 115 has come to a new. Just remember everybody, it's going to be coming up in a couple weeks. Nestember is coming in full force from premium NES free edition games. So we got you know, the second time you're able to get some copies of Ore Body Binder's Tale, and then we will be announcing a brand new game. Also, make sure you get Tristan's books while you can. Get that damn limited slip case. Like, it is,
that's right. Oops,
we're not making extras. Like, we're gonna have a couple extras probably for just you and me or something. Like, it's,
yeah, like, honestly, like, I'm not joking around about that. So if you want one, get it now. It's your only opportunity.
Exactly. Like, we have fun with what we do, but like, it's not infinite. We're not in, like, with everything that we do between Hagen's Alley with books and when we do games, like, we're doing it because we think it's cool, but we can't do it infinitely. So it does come to the support, and we appreciate all the support from everybody. So the more you support, the more we can do. And that's always what we appreciate, each and everybody. We appreciate the small cohort that we have that listen to video game bullshit with these long, fun episodes that we do. If you want us to do Game Center CX USA, bullshit center, whatever we end up calling it. Let us know. Hit us up in the comments on YouTube or in Spotify or on Apple iTunes. Let us know you want to see it, and it'll motivate us to get it done, because most of the stuff that we do is because it's fun and we're motivated to do it. Like, we have fun with it.
Right.
So before we sign off, Tristan, you should plug a cool ass article you're working on for Old School Gamer, because it looks awesome.
Oh, yeah. So I came up with this idea. Like, I was talking to Ryan Berger, who runs Old School Gamer magazine, and I wanted to do something, because, like, in the past they did like a price guide, but it was like all encompassing, like really unwieldy, like hard to keep up with. But yeah. I wanted to do something more focused on the what I call heavy hitters of all of the game consoles. So, like, you've got those ones that are like really hard to find if you're a collector of a certain console. Think like Striker Volleyball for Intellivision, or Sculptor's Cut for N64. It's the ones that are impossible to find.
Jack Brothers on the Virtual Boy.
Jack Brothers on the Virtual Boy. Yep, exactly. And we're keeping track of how much they are loose or CIB throughout every single issue, and tracking whether they go up or down. So it'll be a really cool thing to see.
I think it'd be cool to have like these bright arrows, like red.
Oh, no, that's, yep, we're doing it. You're doing it.
I think that's arrows. Cool. So, that's how I see it in my mind. I'm like, that's exactly what you're going to do, isn't it? Like, it's going to be like,
that's right.
Like, it's going up, it's going down. That's awesome. Yeah, that's be cool as hell, though, man. Like, that sounds like a really cool, and the, like, the what you sent me, it's like very easy to read. It's like a double pager, and it looks nice.
Yeah, yeah, we covering the big, so like every single issue we focus on one heavy hitter and explain exactly, you know, its background and why it's so expensive. And then the second page is just all the heavy hitters and their prices.
Nice. Are you, yeah, you're not doing any WADA graded, right? You're just doing straight up CIB.
No WADA gradings, no championship carts, no variants.
Just retail.
Retail, correct.
Like
retail.
Regular release retail. Okay.
But then I've got stadium events, which was, you know, test market, but it was available at retail. So
just regular release.
Yeah.
And I mean, and the thing is just like any collection, you can pick and choose what you want. So it's awesome. Right. But yeah, I wanted to definitely plug that, because I was looking down and I realized earlier that we hadn't mentioned it at the beginning. So we definitely had to mention that coming out in Old School Gamer. Like, we're having fun with stuff, guys. It's been awesome. So anyways, I think that's it for the episode. Find us at premiumeditiongames.com, HagensAlley.com. The episodes are available on Spotify, iTunes, a bunch of other podcasting ones where it automatically populates to, by the way. And there'll be an awesome edited version with a cool intro on YouTube that you're probably seeing this video on, which is really fun. It's the only way to watch this with video. We never had a video podcast, so doing it now as we continue the bullshit river, it's really cool. But thanks, everybody, for listening and watching, and we will see you next time.
Later. Okay.